I sure am. Well, thank you all for joining us today. For those of you who are tuning in via the internet, the Ocean Protection Council is meeting in a new place today, the California Energy Commission. One of our sister entities, the Wildlife Conservation Board, is over in our normal location. So thank you for joining us in person or joining us through the internet. My name is Wade Crowfoot, and I serve as our Natural Resources Secretary, and my position serves as the chair of the OPC. First and foremost, I want to welcome our state controller, Betty Yee, back to the OPC. For those of you who know about our governance, know that our state controller and our lieutenant governor rotate as a seat on the Ocean Protection Council. We were very thankful to have Lieutenant Governor Kunalakis represent very well on the commission over the last couple of years, and now the seat transitions back to Controller Yee. And, of course, Betty's been a long champion of ocean protection and the blue economy. So we're very excited to have you back and welcome any thoughts you have.
Thank you, Chairman Crowfoot. And first of all, it's exciting to be back with my colleagues, Assemblymember Stone, Secretary Blumenfeld, Senator Allen. But I really wanted to just say thank you to your Executive Director, Mark Gold. I know it's going to be an exciting meeting today, but I think we have a blueprint in front of us that really is it's so elevating to look at the ambition and the goals that we have established. Hopefully will be adopted today, but I'm happy to be a part of it. And more importantly, I value and am grateful for already the demonstration of partnership with all of the affected agencies. So thank you, and happy to be back.
Thanks so much. And I'll also congratulate our public member, Jordan Diamond, for growing her family. She missed last meeting as a result of just having another child. So welcome back. So as always, we'll start out our meeting today with any announcements of our members here on the OPC. Let me start by expressing our excitement with this discussion that's happening in partnership with the legislature about developing a climate resilience bond measure for consideration by the voters this November. Legislative leaders last year actually catalyzed this process by putting forward a few different proposals for a general obligation bond that would be a first of its kind to really invest in protecting our people and natural places from the impacts of climate change, what we call climate resilience. We're very proud that Governor Newsom underscored his commitment to working with the legislature to put something on the ballot to strengthen our resilience. In his January budget proposal, he actually outlined a proposed $4.75 billion bond that he would ask the legislature to consider. So conversations are ongoing with legislative leaders about how we can work together and come up with a shared proposal for the consideration by the voters in November of this year. Obviously, one key element of that bond measure has to be building the resilience of our coast and oceans. And so, for example, the governor's proposed bond measure actually has a significant portion that would be focused specifically on addressing sea level rise and other climate-driven impacts to our oceans and coast. So very excited about that evolving conversation. I'll now invite other council members to provide any updates or opening observations they may have. Okay. Well, we'll get right to it. As Controller Yee said, this is quite an exciting meeting as we chart out our strategic priorities for the next 5 years. But let me mention first that we will be enthusiastically taking public comment for items 4 through 8 on today's agenda. At the back of the room, or actually outside of this room, you'll find speaker cards. So if you're interested in sharing public comment, please fill out a speaker card and indicate what agenda item you wish to provide public comment on. And then raise your hand if you're collecting those cards in the room. Okay, great. We're going to ask that public comment be limited to 3 minutes to ensure that everyone's voice is heard. And there's a light here on the podium that will let you know when your time is running down. So most importantly, excited for the engagement of the groups and the leaders we have here in the room today and those watching via the internet. So Mark, without further ado, let me turn it over to you for your executive director's report.
Thanks, Secretary Crowfoot. There's lots going on over and above the strategic action plan that we're going to be talking about on item four. Hopefully everybody had the opportunity to look at the executive director report. Some of the highlights are in the area of kelp, which has always been a big priority here. We've initiated a partnership with California Sea Grant, thanks to Shauna Oh, their director, where $1.8 million will be spent over the next 2 years, with Sea Grant contributing $1.2 million of those dollars, and OPC will be before you in June requesting probably $300,000 a year for 2 years to do research on kelp in the state of California. The call will go out in about a week or so. What's different about this research is it's going to be solution-oriented, not what's going on with the kelp forest, but what can we do to actually stem the tide of kelp forest collapse. And so it's a very unusual in that regard, in that we want to make it action-oriented, and we're really working with the research community to try to find these solutions. And we're in partnership with California Department of Fish and Wildlife every step of the way, in working with Craig Schumann and his folks to make sure that this is really successful. Marine protected areas, as long as we're talking about partnerships with Fish and Wildlife, the decadal evaluation of the MPA network is underway. Two scientific advisory teams, I believe, have met at this point. One is on the efficacy of the Marine Protected Area Network, and the others on climate resilience of the network. The final evaluation will be in 2022, so this is a long process to have these discussions and look at all the available data that people have put together over the last few years, but very important for the future of our MPA network. On the MPA statewide leadership team, two additions were added. Tessa Romero from the Santa Ynez Band of Chumash, as well as from North Coast alternate Laurel Ross, who's the tribal vice chair of the Federated Unions of the Gratan Rancheria. So two additions there that are important. And on outreach and education, small grants program has launched. It's underway, and proposals are being reviewed right now, $750,000 from once through cooling funds, on those small grants. On sea level rise, very exciting news to report, working with both Secretary Crowfoot and Secretary Blumenfeld. There's been the development of a two-page principles document with both of them and leadership from 10 different agencies in the state. To date, there's consensus support on the use of best available science, including the Ocean Protection Council's sea level rise technical guidance document. Building coastal resilience partnerships, strengthening alignment around coastal resilience, improving communications, supporting local leadership, and addressing local conditions on sea level rise, and finally, implementation and learning from coastal resilience projects. These principles will be completed hopefully by this Monday, and we will move on to figure out the best way to disseminate the principles, how to communicate about them, and then most importantly, implement what's actually in the principles themselves. And I just want to give major kudos to Sarah Amanzada and Donna Brownsey from the California Coastal Commission, their commissioners, as well as Jen Eckerly and Linda Sheehan to help put all that together. On ocean acidification, there's a progress report in the back. Hopefully you had a chance to look at. Ocean Protection Council, Ocean Science Trust, and an ocean acidification subcommittee are finalizing a gap analysis for monitoring needs for ocean acidification for the state of California. And also, there's been a great deal of discussion on next steps for research to help inform the State Water Resources Control Board water quality criteria development process. We'll have research and monitoring funding recommendations at the June meeting in San Francisco at the CPUC, so hopefully we'll see all of you there. Also, microplastics, kelp, and whale entanglement will be on that agenda, among other things. So there's going to be a lot of action at that meeting to approve. In the good and bad news department, we are very sad to see two Sea Grant fellows, Allison Kellum and Scott Shadow, leaving us. They've done absolutely extraordinary work on climate and marine protected areas. They've done everything from managing the production of the gorgeous Coast and Ocean Strategic Plan that you've had a chance to become quite familiar with, to helping to manage the Marine Protected Area Outreach and Education Small Grant Program. Please join me in thanking them both and wishing them well on their future coastal protection endeavors. And with Allison and Scott moving on, we welcome on our two new Sea Grant Fellows, Matt Warham and Michaela Miller. Matt is our MPA intern, and he comes to us from the Bren School. It seems to be quite a pipeline from the Bren School coming here. He has tremendous expertise on marine protected areas and aquaculture as well. Off of California, he's worked in Baja, the Caribbean, and South Pacific. And Michaela comes to us from Cal State Monterey Bay, and she's our climate intern, and will work on sea level rise and ocean acidification issues. She has extensive experience working on marine debris and microplastics in the Channel Islands. So let's welcome Matt and Michaela. And with that, I'll pass it over to Dr. Liz Whiteman, the Executive Director of the Ocean Science Trust, where she'll give us an update on the Academic Roadshow, microplastics, and more.
Great. Thank you, Chair Crowfoot, Council members. Two primary updates for you and a couple of science highlights that I thought I would bring to this venue. First, highlighting one thing from your report from Mark, we're excited to be partnering together with your science advisory team, SQIRP, and SFEI to develop science guidance to underpin a microplastics strategy. We're thrilled to have convened a team of 8 nationally renowned experts who are going to tackle the challenge of developing a risk assessment framework for the impacts of microplastics. This team will complete their work by October of this year, and we're already confident that they're going to produce actionable guidance that orients towards solutions, even as our understanding of the impacts of microplastics is still very nascent and rapidly evolving. Second, as Mark mentioned, an update on our collaborative academic roadshow. A quick reminder, this is to strengthen connections with California's scientific community. We are sharing state priorities with a diverse audience. We're learning about research underway and hopefully fostering a new and growing community of scientists really working in to address and support state needs. Our first stop was UC Davis last month, and a huge thank you to the team at CMSI, the Coastal and Marine Sciences Institute, for hosting such a productive day of presentations and discussions. Among many insights, we were struck by innovation in modeling approaches to tackle the impacts of climate change and to explore sustainable approaches to aquaculture, as well as innovation in graduate education programs, where students are really the ones who are best positioned in many respects to cross traditional disciplinary and department boundaries and also cross to conservation and management practitioners. We're very excited for our second stop next week at the Estuary and Ocean Science Center, San Francisco State University over in Tiburon. And we're really grateful to the many researchers with whom we're now mapping out a route across the state for the remainder of this year and possibly beyond. And so finally, in very much, if I'm direct, in a show don't tell vein, I wanted to illustrate the stronger connections to the research community by highlighting two research papers that have come out in the last quarter. Clearly, this is two from many that could have been selected, but thought these were worth bringing to this venue. And I'm happy to include this in future Science Advisor updates if it is of interest and utility. So first, in a paper in Nature Communications, Dr. Jared Santora and colleagues examined the perfect storm in 2016 of a marine heat wave, whale entanglements in Dungeness crab fishing gear, and a harmful algal bloom delaying the fishery opener that year. They provide scientific evidence that links the warming ocean with the compressed habitat and changing availability of forage fish for the whales that caused and amplified the spatial conflict. So this kind of retrospective analysis is a really important step in developing models and strategies that will allow us to hopefully come up with ways of minimizing that spatial conflict in the future. So that's one. The second, in a paper published last month in the very new journal, Science of the Total Environment, Dr. Nina Bednarsek and colleagues from across the U.S. lend even more urgency to than we expected to addressing the effects of ocean acidification. They documented for the first time that ocean acidification is already affecting the shells and sensory organs of young Dungeness crab, crab sampled from the Pacific Northwest. One of the more important findings from this study was that crabs were also showing signs of shell dissolution were smaller than others, and sending up a red flag, obviously, for how that might progress into future maturity and development and entry into the fishery. So these effects that were observed from crabs sampled, as I mentioned, in the Pacific Northwest were not actually expected until previously predicted until mid-century. So I think, you know, the challenge to us as new research like this will continue to refine our understanding of the timing and magnitude of climate impacts. We have to do what we're doing, I hope, in continuing to foster ways that we translate that new research into knowledge that is both usable and used in management decisions. So I will pause there.
Thank you so much, Liz. Let's open it up to commissioners' questions. Jared.
So, Liz, maybe you could tell us just a teeny bit very briefly about the microplastics impact strategy and how we as commissioners could feed into that.
So this is the strategy is legislatively mandated for the Ocean Protection Council to develop. I invite Mark to pile on to my remarks here. I think given the nascent understanding of microplastic impacts, it's a reasonable first step to say what is a science strategy or a science investment strategy. And so the science advisory team, which is convened now and as I mentioned, working through this summer, is first going to use the development of a risk assessment framework to identify data gaps and ways that those might be filled. And I think that's the most actionable first set of information that we can provide. But also the risk assessment framework, while it may not be fully quantitative, can start to orient to sort of no regret strategies or precautionary strategies to begin to explore solutions even as our understanding is developing.
So I would just add a couple things. So Holly Wire is the lead on OPC staff, and she's been convening representatives from a number of different agencies, including the State Water Resources Control Board, on this issue. On top of that, what you're going to see in June will probably be a proposal, because there are some gaps that we do know about. Think about that San Francisco Estuary Institute work and that they did. They didn't have enough money to really characterize about half of the fraction that they collected throughout the estuary. So you heard about tire dust and microplastics, but what are the microplastic fraction, the other 50%, if you will? What is it made of? And so that's one of the things we want to fund, is for them to better identify, you know, what are the sources of the plastics, you know, 1 through 6, if you think about the types of plastics. And so that's one thing. And then the other thing is more solutions oriented, is working with the Southern California Coastal Water Research Project on determining the efficacy of various different levels of wastewater treatment in microplastic removal. And so whether the difference you see between primary, secondary, tertiary using filters, microfiltration, reverse osmosis, we really want to get to that point and really understand that to really see the benefits of that level of treatment. And so those are the two things you'll see in June.
I think a lot of us are really eager to embrace an action plan on microplastics. And is it fair to say that this scientific work that you all are initiating is really can be a foundation that informs our actions?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll just make two comments and a question. The first comment is I'm really excited about this academic roadshow. I think it's really smart that you two are partnering on this and actually getting out to the UCs, the CSUs, the research institutions to explain what our scientific questions are and our sort of policy priorities. My time in state government, I've long thought there need to be stronger linkages between, you know, state-funded academic research and the work that we're doing at the state. I was really glad to hear just how organized UC Davis was in terms of presenting their work, even in the context of our strategic plan. So I think that's really encouraging. Secondly, is it continues to be really energizing watching young scientists come into and out of the OPC. And I know Jared and I are really focused on lifting up scientists and science-based decision-making in our agencies, especially at our time when the federal administration is in full retreat of science-based decision-making. So big thanks to C. Grant and for the work that you all do to really bring up these scientists that find themselves all over the place in our policymaking ecosystem. Last point is actually a question. Remind us, Mark, you had suggested that we do some of our meetings outside of Sacramento. So I think you talked about the Bay Area being the next meeting. Can you just talk about what the meeting schedule looks like for the rest of the year and how it splits between Sacramento and non-Sacramento?
I think the thoughts are, and this is where Jen might run to a podium somewhere, but is that the next meeting is in San Francisco, and we're thinking of the September meeting being somewhere in the LA vicinity. If Ben Allen was here, you know, this could have been his time to say where he wanted it near his district. But anyways, we'll have to give him a hard time for that later. But that was the thought.
Well, great. That's helpful. And then presumably over time, we're going to get to different parts of the coast, North Coast, right. Central Coast, et cetera.
Yep.
Good.
Central Coast is good, Mark, right? What was that place we visited?
Oh, we have several great locations for us.
Thank you. Very excited about the projects coming up. And one kind of data point that struck me, which then made me question about how our work will be, I guess, translated to the general public, because all of this is really great work. But at the same time, I feel like we have an obligation to kind of keep the public informed. So, for example, I was astonished by the study that found that stormwater actually transports 300 times more microplastic to the bay than wastewater. And so, but things like that were, I guess, just a general reminder that that we ought to think about at every turn not being so insular with the work that we do. And so wherever there's a connection externally, we should take advantage of that.
Agreed. Very much so.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we as a OPC have constructively pushed staff over the last year to help us collectively communicate both, you know, threats and opportunities. Yeah, exactly. And so this gets into the report card, et cetera, that you'll talk about within the action plan.
Yeah, and I think the action plan itself, now that we're hopefully going to approve it in the next item, it really gives us the framework and the baseline in which to better communicate throughout the state. And so I look forward to that.
Great. Well, then that's a great segue. Let's move on to the next agenda item, which is an action item, as Mark just noted, the discussion and possible adoption of the strategic plan. What we'll do is hear first from Dr. Gold in a short presentation, just sort of highlighting the strategic plan. Then we'll take public comment, and then after public comment, we have the benefit of the public comment, we'll open it up to the council to ask questions and share observations. So, Mark.
All right. Sounds good. First slide. All right. So at this point, I know everybody here is quite familiar with this plan. But what I think is sort of extraordinary in talking about the urgency of the plan itself is just what's even occurred in the last 60 days since the last draft when it comes to the science. And you heard from Liz about the disturbing outcome of the research that Nina Benarsik led on our number one fishery in the state of California, which is Dungeness crab. And the fact that we have dissolving crab larvae is something that nobody in their worst nightmare expected for at least another decade. And as Liz said, most people thought was mid-century. And it was just Valentine's Day where Antarctica was 69 degrees. So it was actually a lot warmer in Antarctica than it was here in Sacramento that day. And so it's a very much of an eye-opener from the standpoint of what the urgency is for this action plan. And so what we started a few months ago, six, 7 months ago, versus where we are today, I feel like that urgency has just really increased dramatically. Next. So as you know, there's the four major goals within this plan. I'm not going to spend the time on it the same way we did last time. Actually, you can just sort of thumb through the goals quite quickly because I'm not going to dwell on each one for any significant time. What I thought might be helpful in something that we're really trying to get out there is 10 of the most sweeping targets that we have in here. So rather than, you know how comprehensive it is, and obviously there's the four different goal areas, climate and equity and biodiversity and the blue economy, but just some examples of those, sort of a top 10, if you will. Ensuring California's coast is resilient to at least 3.5 feet of sea level rise by 2050. Restoring or creating an additional 10,000 acres of coastal wetlands by 2025. And that was a number, frankly, we worked with the Coastal Conservancy quite some time to come up with something that made sense. And there's a number of other different wetland targets in there as well. Establishing state water quality objectives for ocean acidification and hypoxia by 2025. I think the urgency on OAH has gone up dramatically just based on the recent study on Dungeness crab. Developing an action plan for addressing rocky intertidal and beach habitat loss due to sea level rise by 2023. We spent far too much time talking about sea level rise from the standpoint of a managed retreat perspective rather than the fact that some of our most precious resources here on the state of California, our iconic beaches, tide pools, coastal wetlands, are at risk, not to mention a great deal of our infrastructure, and really reframing that and focusing on what's at stake here, because the sea level rise in the years to come is a big part of what this action plan is really all about. Developing and beginning implementation of a statewide kelp forest research and restoration plan by 2020. You heard about that earlier. With the work that we're doing with Sea Grant, Fish and Wildlife, in really moving forward on that right away, and there will be a kelp action plan that's going to come out of that. Develop and fund implementation of a tribal marine protected area monitoring program based on priorities shared between the state and California's tribes by this year, 2020. So that's something that right now OPC staff, Mike Escrow, Marina, and others are working on that effort, and you're going to see that maybe as early as the June meeting. Developing a statewide whale and sea turtle protection plan with a target of zero mortality. Doesn't mean we'll get to zero mortality, but that should be the target we have in the state of California. And that plan will be brought before you in 2022. Supporting modernization of the harmful algal bloom notification network to provide real-time data by 2022 and predictions by 2024. We're already working with Scripps and SCOOS. You guys funded about $1.3 million to really get that up and going, to have real-time monitoring. So they're working on that as we speak to get that program going. And I think Clarissa Anderson might actually be here today. If she chooses to talk about that. A priority for State Water Resources Control Board that we're adopting here as well is to work to achieve zero trash entering state waters by 2030, which is your policy, and develop a statewide microplastic strategy by 2021, which we've just talked about. And then finally, certainly not last or least, but is developing a statewide aquaculture action plan focused on marine algae and shellfish, and getting that done by 2023. We keep dealing with the aquaculture on a case-by-case basis. We really need a comprehensive plan to move forward. It's important for the blue economy, and we just haven't done so. And so working just hand in glove with Fish and Wildlife will be absolutely critical to making that a reality. So those are just some of the many highlights that are within this action plan. You can flip through the goals real quick. Next. On equity, obviously access for all is such a big goal for the Governor Newsom administration, and there's a number of items there as well. Next. enhancing coastal marine ecosystems, whether it's marine protected areas or climate-ready fisheries, big parts of that goal. And finally, next, are the blue economy. And one item I didn't mention that I know is near and dear to Controller Yi is also looking at offshore wind and how can we ever get a program of offshore wind up and going that's really going to make a difference, help us get to 100% renewables and do that in a reliable fashion. Obviously, wind is an area that we haven't really taken advantage of in the ocean environment, but we want to do it in an environmental and culturally sound manner. And there's a lot of effort, especially working with this building, the California Energy Commission, and really trying to figure out how to make that happen. So with that, I think I'll stop there, and we can move on to the discussion.
Great. As I said, I think it would be helpful to take public comment first so that that can inform our discussion as a council. So why don't I start with Craig Schumann from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, followed by Jonathan Bishop from the State Water Board.
Good afternoon, Secretary Crowfoot, members of the Council, Craig Schumann, Marine Region Manager, California Department of Fish and Wildlife. I'm here to express our support for the strategic plan, its four goals, and its very ambitious objectives and actions. I'd like to thank Dr. Gold for his leadership and commend staff for all the hard work they put into this. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you personally and your entire department for being such a strong partner on the development of the plan.
Thank you.
Great. Next, Jonathan Bishop, followed by Mary Small of the Coastal Conservancy.
Good afternoon. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm here to support the strategic plan and the goals. I do think that they are stretch, and that's good. We ought to be stretching. My agency is looking forward to working with your staff on implementing these goals. Many of these goals are also in our ocean plan try and review as priorities for the next few years. For example, the 3.4.1, 3.4.7, both are in our this very similar language in our ocean plan. Additionally, I did see that you received some comments concerning the reduction of nitrogen issues, and I just want to say from the Water Board's point of view, the changing of adding language like viable beneficial uses or changing the latest science to the best available science seemed to give little help to improve it. We are not going to use science that's not the best science when we're working towards that. And, you know, we consider all of our beneficial uses to be viable, and it really depends on the cost of water and the need for that water on how viable it is to recycle it. So I'm happy to answer any questions if they come up.
Thanks, Thank Jonathan. You. I'll just underscore the point you made, which is a lot of the targets and the actions here are not limited to the Ocean Protection Council. We recognize that this is really, if we're going to meet these goals, which are ambitious goals, there has to be an unprecedented level of collaboration and leadership across the state. So huge thanks to you for rolling up sleeves and partnering so closely with Dr. Gold and the whole OPC team on the action plan.
We're looking forward to continuing that.
Great. Next, we hear from Mary Small, followed by Steve Jepson of the Southern California Alliance of Publicly Owned Treatment Works, or SCAP.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Mary Small, the Chief Deputy of the State Coastal Conservancy. I will just echo the comments that were just made. We commend the OPC on a bold vision, but also breaking it down into really specific targets and actions, many of which also are directly aligned with the Coastal Conservancy's strategic plan and the work that we're doing. And so we look forward to the next phase, to working in partnership on the implementation.
Yeah, huge thanks for all you do at the Conservancy, which is getting us, you know, upon which we're building work on. So we'll hear from Steve, and then next, Lorian Fono from the Bay Area Clean Water Agency.
Thanks for the opportunity to comment today, and thank you for your vision and your plan to protect our oceans. My name is Steve Jepson. I'm the executive director for the Southern California Alliance of Publicly Owned Treatment Works. We represent over 80 water wastewater agencies in seven counties of Southern California. SCAP's members treat over 2 billion gallons of wastewater a day, producing recycled water, renewable energy, and soil amendments. As I said, it's a great, bold plan, and we are in support of the plan, except for a tiny element, which I'd like to discuss. And that is target 1.2.3 and the language of 80 to 90% of beneficial reuse. With this goal, I think there are two inputs that are maybe missing. One is engineering, and one is ocean acidification modeling certainty. So I'll start with the ocean acidification modeling certainty, the Ramsbeck model specifically. The Ramsbeck model is still in draft. The final Ramsbeck model has not been completed, validated, peer-reviewed, or published. Previous renditions of the model have been shown to have an over-prediction of phytoplankton. So SCORP is working on the model, and before it should be used as a significant driver of attributing ocean acidification to wastewater outfalls, we think SCORP needs to have time to have more certainty with the model, get more peer review, like I said before, it should be used as a regulatory driver. The other element of input is engineering. And I'm not an engineer, but I've spent most of my life working in engineering offices. I have lots of engineering jokes that would probably entertain this crowd for another time. I have office space in an engineering company, a wastewater engineering company, and when I showed the 80 to 90% goal of beneficial reuse to the engineers I work with regularly, it was met with raised eyebrows or guffaws. It's a very ambitious number, and it represents perfect, complete recycling for the entire year, every day of the year, regardless of season or other wastewater inputs. So I wanted to put that in perspective a little bit, maybe add some visual elements to the vision of this plan. So per state regulations, wastewater recycling programs require 90 days of storage if there's not an alternate means of discharge, such as an outfall. And this 90 days of storage is to accommodate seasonal variability. There's low demand in the wet winters for recycled water. So I mentioned earlier that SCAP members treat 2 billion gallons of wastewater a day. That's over 6,000 acre feet per day. If we attempted to store even 60 days of that water during a wet weather period, that would be 360,000 acre feet. That's about the same size as the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. Imagine trying to construct the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir in Southern California to meet the 80 to 90% goal. For comparison, I'll cite some reservoir capacities in Southern California.
And Mr. Jepson, you're over the three-minute mark, so I'd ask you to summarize and conclude, and then I'll make sure to essentially raise this point in the discussion with our members.
Super. I will wrap up super quickly, and my colleagues are less than 3 minutes, and we'll even out. But anyway, L.A., Castaic Lake.
It's not the U.S. Senate.
Castaic Lake in L.A. is 320,000 acre feet. Riverside County, Prado Dam, 314,000 acre feet. On down to San Diego County, San Vicente Reservoir, 240,000 acre feet. None of these are equivalent to the modest estimate of 360,000 acre feet required. So in closing, we are in support of the plan, but we support refining the language of Target 1.2.3 to be more practical and beneficial for the public, and making sure it is the best use of energy and funds for recycling water. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jepson. And as I said, we can bring these points up in our discussion as council. Next, Lorian followed by Charlie LaSalle at Water Reuse California.
Council members, thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. My name is Lorian Fono. I represent the Bay Area Clean Water Agencies. We're a joint powers agency that represents the municipal wastewater treatment community in the San Francisco Bay region, including more than 40 wastewater treatment plants. And like Steve, we support the plan in general, but we have some concerns about Target 1.2.3 that would impact an ongoing process in our region. So in our region, we've long recognized the need to evaluate possible impacts of nutrients on the aquatic environment. Before rushing to implement treatment upgrades, we want to make sure that we understand what actions will have the greatest positive impacts on the San Francisco Bay. Our members participate in the regional nutrient watershed NPDS permit that's tied to the region's nutrient management strategy, which is a stakeholder-driven process that includes regulators, dischargers, scientists, and the NGO community. We recognize that investments in science are key to understanding the impacts of nutrients, including the differential impacts in different locations and during different seasons. So BACWA is contributing $2.2 million every year to fund scientific studies on nutrient impacts. The studies are being conducted through the San Francisco Estuary Institute, and this includes $400,000 to $600,000 allocated over the next 2 to 3 years to study the impacts of nutrient exports from the Golden Gate on the coastal ecosystem. At the same time, we're conducting evaluations of potential nutrient load reduction strategies. As part of the first nutrient watershed permit, we completed an evaluation of potential nutrient load reductions through traditional optimization and upgrades at our treatment facilities. As part of our second and current watershed permit, we're looking at nutrient load reductions through avenues that would have multiple benefits, such as recycled water and nature-based wetland systems. These evaluations consider the costs as well as the ancillary impacts of these actions, such as increased greenhouse gas emissions. The evaluations also consider the benefits of the projects, such as potable offsets, sea level rise protection, and habitat establishment. So we appreciate the updates to Target 1.2.3 to stipulate that reducing nutrient loading and or phasing out coastal sewage discharge into the ocean will be based on science. However, continuing to include the goal of 80 to 90% coastal water recycling is rushing to a conclusion prior to having the necessary scientific resolution. Rushing to both require and implement this goal could undermine the progress we've made in ensuring management actions are tied to the science, understanding local impacts and considering costs and overall benefits of taking action before the science is concluded. But ultimately, we understand that we are all on the same page here. We want to protect the coastal environment while increasing our scientific understanding of these systems and maximizing the benefit and minimizing the cost to our communities. We look forward to working with your member agencies to make sure these ideals are realized while implementing the OPC strategic plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Charlie LaSalle, followed by Tom Ford of the Bay Foundation.
Members of the Council, I'm Charlie LaSalle. I represent Water Reuse California. I want to thank you for the opportunity to comment here today. I'm here to comment specifically on Target 123, which you heard others talk about, regarding the wastewater discharge to the ocean. First, I want to acknowledge that the Ocean Protection Council has made some changes to this section of the strategic plan, and we are thankful for those changes. However, we feel that those changes do not go far enough, and that with a small change, the strategic plan can be brought in alignment with the goals of the recycled water policy, which was recently adopted by the State Water Board. We ask that the word viably be added to the second sentence of Target 123. As modified, it would read, work with partners to achieve a goal of 80 to 90% coastal wastewater recycling that can be viably put to beneficial use by 2040. The term viably was settled upon after many months of debate and collaboration between California Coastkeepers Alliance, Water Reuse California, and CASA as part of an adoption of the recycled water policy. The State Water Board and staff members of the State Water Board unanimously accepted this change to the recycled water policy. This is a small change that will make a big difference for agencies along the California coast. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlie. Next, Tom Ford, followed by Natalie Kulk of California Coastkeeper Alliance.
Yes. good morning, afternoon. Tom Ford, the Bay Foundation, based in Los Angeles, California. I want to congratulate all of you on a well-visioned and well-detailed strategic plan that I think is going to serve the people and the state of California excellently over the next several years. Easy for me to say that, as at the Bay Foundation, my day-in, day-out job is to help implement the Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan of the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program with numerous partners and most especially with the State Water Resources Quality Control Board. So looking forward to moving forward with this plan and helping you implement it. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tom. Natalie Kolk, followed by Michael Jones.
Good afternoon, Council members. I'm Natalie Kolk, Associate Director of California Coastkeeper Alliance. We're extremely excited to get started on implementation of this much-improved strategic plan, which we hope that the Council will adopt today. In particular, we want to thank staff for new additions to the plan, including the creation of a wetlands baseline, establishing interim goals for reducing coastal discharges while retaining a strong ocean wastewater recycling goal, which we believe is reasonable and viable, and as you all are aware, is meant to be a goal, not a mandate, as well as changes and additions to the plan to create a permanent beneficial reuse program and a vessel speed reduction program to minimize whale strikes while improving coastal air quality. These actions and the actions included in previous versions of the plan around setting an ocean acidification and hypoxia water quality objective and water quality protections for MPAs are among California Coastkeeper Alliance's top priorities for the next 3 to 5 years. So please do consider us a partner and a resource moving forward and reach out if we can provide any assistance. I would like to flag that we feel the trash activities in the plan could be strengthened. We appreciate, though, that the litter strategy was developed with a prior administration, so we are not asking for any changes at this time, but we do hope that the OPC can be aggressive in preventing trash from flowing into our waterways and eventually our ocean. Again, thank you, staff, for this visionary document, and thank you, council members, for being willing to get stuff done on ocean and coastal issues.
Thank you, Natalie. Next, Michael Jones from TMA Blue Tech, followed by Rachel Cochia from Surfrider.
Council members, my name is Michael Jones. I'm the president of TMA Blue Tech. We are the largest ocean and water technology cluster in the United States, one of the largest in the world. It's great to see this kind of forward-leaning approach to protection and including the blue economy. California is a powerhouse worldwide in blue technology, and to see this incorporation of both the educational aspects, bringing underserved communities, trying to find and utilize innovative technologies is not only good for the ocean, but it's also good for the economy. And we need to be setting a standard for the world. I think this is a very timely approach, and we congratulate your work. We are an industry association. We would be happy to provide input from industry on both technology and services. As we like to say, Blue Tech is allowing scientists and researchers to find the problems that humans have created over thousands of years as we've thrown things in the ocean. And it's Blue Tech that will allow us to solve them. So thank you very much for your leadership, and we look forward to helping.
Thank you, Michael. Next, Rachel Cochia from Surfrider, followed by Anna Zivian from Ocean Conservancy.
Good afternoon, Secretary Crowfoot and Council members. I'm Rachel Cochia, Surfrider Foundation Plastic Pollution Manager, on behalf of our 20 chapters and 100,000 supporters in California. First, congratulations to your staff for a thoughtful, ambitious, and well-designed draft strategic plan. The goals within reflect the bold steps California needs to take if we are to repair the past harm done to our coast and ocean and better protect them going forward. We appreciate the acknowledgement that our coastal and ocean ecosystems and species have intrinsic value and are not merely resources for human use. Founded by ocean recreation enthusiasts, Surfrider has, since inception, acknowledged the role of protection as part of our enjoyment. Thinking ahead to the implementation of the plan, we agree that collaborative partnerships with other state agencies is absolutely critical, particularly on the topic of sea level rise. Ensuring the state's agencies are aligned and complementary in regulation and projects will require other agencies to be more willing partners than some have been thus far. We understand efforts are underway to improve coordination and look forward to those efforts manifesting in better outcomes in the near future. We also see areas where Surf Riders program staff and our vast chapter network of coastal activists can be of assistance. We have a long, successful history of fighting for public access on the coast. We were critical to the implementation of the Marine Life Protection Act and currently sit on the expert assessment group for the IUCN Green List. Our Mendocino chapter is an active expert part of the North Coast Help the Kelp campaign. We have 20 Blue Water Task Force labs regularly sampling water quality along the coast, including at the southern border, where we're also leading efforts to stop pollution in the Tijuana River Valley. We also have an ocean-friendly gardens program that uses landscaping and streets to prevent stormwater runoff from contaminating our waterways. The Ocean Protection Council has proven to be state leaders on reducing plastic pollution, especially with the recent California Ocean Litter Strategy that was passed with OPC at the helm and is now being ushered in to prevent and reduce the single-use plastic that plagues our beaches. Our team at Surf Rider are also well-regarded experts and advocates in the field of plastic pollution. Over 250 restaurants across the state have joined our Ocean Friendly Restaurants program, which is designed to help celebrate efforts to reduce single-use plastics and foodware. Our chapters host regular beach cleanups up and down the coast to collect data, which is entered into our beach cleanup tool to further inform our campaign work. In short, much like OPC, our work is almost wholly focused on protecting the coast and our shared ocean. Therefore, we hope that Surf Rider and our greater network can provide support and serve as a resource throughout the implementation of the OPC's strategic plan. We appreciate the clear path and tangible goals that have been laid out and believe that with everyone working together from state agencies to stakeholders, those goals can be achieved, thus resulting in a preserved, protected coastal marine environment that all Californians and visitors to the state can continue to enjoy. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Rachel. Anna Zivian is next, followed by Irene Gutierrez.
Thank you, Chairman Crowfoot and council members, for the opportunity to comment in support of the strategic plan. I'm Anna Zivian, Senior Research Fellow at Ocean Conservancy. We appreciate OPC's recognition that its four main goals, climate change, equity, biodiversity, and the blue economy, are cross-cutting and interacting. The updated plan expands on the targets, especially in Goal 1, providing more detail on when, with whom, and how the targets and overall objectives will be met. And we appreciate the focus on latest scientific knowledge, as in this time of rapid change, OPC and all of us have to continue to update our knowledge. As you begin your external work over the next 5 years, we would like to reiterate our previous comments on internal capacity building, on justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. While this is no longer explicit in the plan, OPC staff should focus on these issues to better understand and engage with state stakeholders. As part of the August 14th draft plan, the target to invest in staff training around environmental justice and social equity and government best practices was included. We suggest that this be considered an internal goal. For OPC to be an effective advocate for equity and justice externally, it will help to address these issues within its own staff and operational structure. We look forward to seeing the ambitious and necessary bodies of work of the strategic plan unfold over the next 5 years and offer our continued partnership to support these goals. Thanks. Also, one quick note of support for the disbursements in items 5 through 8 so that I don't have to run back up here each time. These are all really important issues and projects. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anna. Irene Gutierrez, followed by Alexis Jackson.
Good afternoon. I'm Irene Gutierrez, a senior attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council. So we really appreciate the plan's dedication to safeguarding against climate change, enhancing biodiversity, promoting the blue economy, and advancing equity. We also appreciate that the plan has a number of clear targets and benchmarks. So I'd like to highlight a couple of areas where we truly appreciate OPC's efforts and look forward to further collaboration.
So first, on the ecosystems and communities piece, we really appreciate that the plan recognizes the value of marine protected areas in safeguarding against climate change. And within this body of work, we think one piece that's really important to pay attention to is the importance of monitoring and making sure that monitoring is adequately funded. That's really key to making sure that MPAs are successful. On the sustainable fisheries front, we appreciate that the plan is really sensitive to how climate change is affecting state fisheries and the need for responsive strategies such as scaled management and adaptive management strategies that take climate change into account. My colleague Dylan Hansen-Ahumada will testify on whale entanglement, but we appreciate that the strategic plan also takes that into account and makes that a priority and makes reduction of whale entanglement a priority. On the blue economy front, at NRDC, we do a lot of work on seafood traceability and fighting illegal seafood imports, so we appreciate that that was called out in the plan. We want to flag that there is also this other component that's important to take into account. In addition to traceability and environmental sustainability, taking account of the labor abuses that happen in illegal seafood imports is also important. So we urge the council to think about the ways that that could be taken into account in the planning that the state does. I appreciated the mention of the value of renewable energy projects in the ocean, such as offshore wind, and thank you, Commissioner Yi, for your interest. That's something that we care greatly about at NRDC, and we look forward to collaborating with the Council on responsible siting and planning for that process. So, yeah, thank you for the plan, and we look forward to further collaboration.
Thank you for all that NRDC does.
Great.
Alexis Jackson, followed by Gilly Lyons.
Good afternoon. Alexis Jackson representing the Oceans Program for the Nature Conservancy. So we wanted to applaud the Ocean Protection Council for the draft plan that's been put forward. We feel like it's the kind of action that's needed for long-term resource management and conservation efforts off of our coast. And we're already starting to see the impacts of the climate crisis with the marine heat wave that we saw in 2014, 2015. We saw that ravage our kelp forest ecosystems. We saw how harmful algal blooms shuttered some of our local fisheries. And so we feel like this plan is really stepping in the right direction of advancing the kind of adaptive climate-ready management model that we need to see within California. So this plan is well-structured in that it will allow us to effectively measure and track progress over the next 5 years in achieving these kind of statewide benefits. And we're really pleased to see that OPC is continuing to prioritize several key enabling factors around climate-ready fisheries management, which looks like advancing fisheries and climate science, modernizing our fisheries information systems, and continuing to promote these adaptive and flexible management systems. And so we're encouraged to see that efforts are being made to protect and restore kelp forest systems to ensure that we have sustainable fisheries, reducing the inflows of plastics into our oceans, and also continuing to conserve coastal habitats. And finally, we would like to acknowledge the progress that's actually already been made around implementation by the OPC with respect to whale entanglement through the completion of its robust investment strategy to minimize whale and sea turtle entanglement in fishing gear. And so in closing, bold action is needed to tackle these threats that are occurring off our coasts. We really appreciate OPC's continued leadership on this area, and we continue to look forward to collaborating with you all on climate-ready actions that are needed off our coast. And so we encourage you to adopt this plan today. And thank you for the time.
Thank you, Alexis, for all you're doing. Gilly Lyons, followed by Anna Weinstein.
Good afternoon, Secretary Crowfoot, members of the council and council staff. My name is Gilly Lyons with the Pew Charitable Trusts, and we just wanted to take this opportunity today to echo the words of support that have already been offered so far, and also to thank OPC staff for their great work on developing this strategic plan. We think the document before you today articulates both a forward-looking and ambitious vision for the next 5 years, and just as importantly, the key steps and actions needed to realize that vision. In particular, we greatly appreciate the plan's emphasis on and specificity around actions regarding eelgrass protection, kelp restoration, MOMA implementation, and sea level rise adaptation, and maybe a few other words ending in T-I-O-N. We very much look forward to working with you all and your many partners on these and other focal areas in the coming years, and would like to express our support for the adoption of the plan today. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Gilly. Anna, followed by Jared Voskal.
Good afternoon. Hi, I'm Anna Weinstein representing Audubon California and our over 150,000 members and supporters who are passionate about birds. So first off, congratulations, Dr. Gold and staff, on an ambitious yet doable plan. And you can count on Audubon for our continued substantive engagement and support for these goals. We're very excited about it. So Audubon has a special focus on eelgrass due to its foundational role in the marine ecosystem, its ability to sequester carbon and ameliorate ocean acidification. And so we really appreciate the plans, the final plans retaining the specific acreage goals for eelgrass and the intent to work with all sorts of partners to achieve those goals, which will be necessary. We also appreciate a couple of additions to the plan I want to call out. First of all, citing the California eelgrass mitigation policy as the key technical and policy guidance for restoring eelgrass. Despite its dry title, the KEMP, since its adoption by NIMS in 2015, has done a lot of useful work on behalf of eelgrass in our state. And we encourage OPC to let the National Marine Fisheries Service know it would like to see the five-year review for the KEMP happen this coming year, 2020. Another addition we appreciate is the goal of a sustainable statewide aquaculture plan by 2023. Importantly, the plan defines sustainable as aquaculture that presents only de minimis impacts, if any, to marine habitats and species. We agree with this definition. Audubon looks forward to representing birds in this process. The highest densities of and abundances of water birds and shorebirds are found in intertidal habitats, and they rely on these remaining undeveloped areas to sustain them on the Pacific Flyway. You might have all seen the news splashed over the headlines in the past months about a 30% decline overall in North American birds. That includes a 37% decline in shorebirds in 50 years, and aquaculture can negatively impact shorebirds and waterbirds. However, when sized and sited properly, they can coexist. So in closing, bravo on the plan, and thank you on behalf of our members. Look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Anna. Jared Voskal, followed by Nicole Palma.
Hi, good afternoon, Chair Crowfoot and Secretary Blumenfeld and council members. Jared Voskal on behalf of the CASA, the California Association of Sanitation Agencies. CASA represents over 125 public agencies and cities who provide wastewater collection, treatment, and recycling throughout the state. I want to thank the council and for the leadership on this plan and also acknowledge our work together. Most recently, CASA sponsored SB 1263 pertaining to microplastics. And I want to commend your staff's work and Holly for developing the statewide microplastic strategy that this bill called for, and it's represented in Target 3.4.4 of the plan. The water, wastewater, and recycled water communities appreciate the council and staff incorporating into this version of the plan some of our comments on the November 2019 version of it regarding Objective 1.2.3 for ocean acidification, coastal discharges, and water recycling. On the agenda for today, I observed that it said that the version of this plan is near final, and so we wanted to submit this for your consideration. Just a couple of last technical changes to the wording in Target 1.2.3. They're just small ones, but it would get it to where our public agency members who will be implementing this are more comfortable with where this lands. I'm uncertain if you can entertain these changes today, like if a change sheet's needed, but I just provided you with a small handout kind of summarizing what those were, just so that it hopefully make you a little bit more comfortable. These aren't big asks, but they are important ones. So we submitted these in writing, and several others have submitted letters commenting on these. But just to summarize them here quickly for the people in the room, the first change is to modify a phrase in this objective in Target 1.2.3. To change it to the phrase best available science. Currently in the plan, this phrase is used 8 other times, but in Target 1.2.3, it uses the phrase latest scientific findings. This is a small difference, but I have some instances in mind where this could make a real impact. If you are curious, we could discuss later. But we think this phrase, it's important because it matches the OPC's mission statement, which uses the phrase best available science. And it says when making decisions and actions, it should be based on the best available science. For such an important objective, we're hopeful that this language can be incorporated in and modified. The second change is to update the portion of Target 1.2.3 pertaining to water recycling and to include that term viable in there. That term isn't just a casual term that was used. There were terms like reasonable and feasible that were considered at the State Water Board's hearing to adopt the recycled water policy. But Coast Keeper and the environmental community and the wastewater community, they couldn't find consensus on those terms. But they had a moment where they kind of went in during a lunch break, hashed it out, came up with viable would be fine. They kind of worked it out with Mr. Bishop here, and then the board adopted it unanimously. So this term, it's kind of like telephone. We want to make sure this important word in this policy gets imported into this important policy document on OAH. And so with those two requests, I'll close here, but just like to thank you for the opportunity. And if you have any questions or reservations about these requests, more than happy to answer them later on. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jared. I would clarify that this item is a discussion and possible adoption of the strategic plan, so there is obviously the opportunity to consider, you know, any changes. So just to be clear in terms of this meeting.
Okay.
Thank you. Nicole Palma, followed by Jason Giffen.
Hello, Secretary Crowfoot, council members. My name is Nicole Palma, and I am the program manager for the MPA Collaborative Network. The Collaborative Network would like to express our support for the adoption of the strategic plan and offer our diverse network of over 600 individual members from every coastal county as a resource to the state to help achieve the outlined goals and also as an avenue for information dissemination. Today, I wanted to highlight just a few of the areas where our goals are aligned. As noted in the plan, California's MPA network is one powerful tool for providing nature-based climate resilience. We look forward to understanding more about the role California's MPAs play in conferring climate resilience and sharing new information from the OPC's scientific report with our members, many of whom have already indicated their interest in integrating climate change messaging into their MPA programs. The Collaborative Network also looks forward to contributing to the 10-year assessment of MPA performance in 2022, and the implementation of recommendations starting in 2023. We are proud to already be working towards actions outlined for Target 3.1.1. The MPA Collaborative Network's three-year compliance initiative, supported by the OPC, began this year in San Diego. Calla Allison, the director of the Collaborative Network, led the San Diego County MPA training for officers and allied agencies that saw around 50 attendees just this morning, in collaboration with the San Diego Collaborative and CDFW. Additionally, collaboratives hope to receive once-through cooling mitigation funds to increase marine life associated with MPAs through MPA education and outreach programs, with projects such as signage assessments and translations, expansion of kids' activities, curriculums, and docent trainings, and development of engaging animated videos. Like the state of California, the Collaborative Network is committed to actively engaging tribes, underserved, and frontline communities in the science-based collaborative management of our coastal and ocean resources. In the coming years, we hope to build upon our history of successful diverse stakeholder engagement by establishing and answer the request of our tribal representative members by establishing a statewide tribal council within the Collaborative Network. We hope to have the support of OPC in this endeavor and simultaneously offer our support to the OPC in its goal to advance equity across ocean and coastal policies and actions by providing the invaluable local perspective and connection to the on-the-ground experts in the collaboratives. Thank you for your time today and for all the work that has gone into this ambitious yet necessary plan.
Thank you, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Jason Giffen, followed by Paula Sylvia.
Great. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Secretary Crowfoot, members of the council. My name is Jason Giffen, Vice President for Planning, Environment, and Government Relations with the Port of San Diego. On behalf of the Port of San Diego, I'd like to thank the council and staff for all the time and effort you've put into development of the strategic plan. And with your indulgence, I just would like to provide a little context on the port and our perspectives. Interestingly, your mission and the ports have a great deal of common alignment. We work with and we want to work with you to help you and the state achieve its goal. As a non-taxing public corporation and agency with responsibility to provide public benefits to over 14,000 acres of tidelands and submerged lands in and around San Diego Bay, our mission is to support navigation, commerce, fisheries, recreation, and environmental stewardship. Tidelands-wide, we fuel a blue economy in support of over 44,000 jobs, many of which are working waterfront and scientific jobs and that are high-paying. All of our operations are based on public-public or public-private partnerships with close scientific and business interest relationships, as well as we work really hard with some of the partners in the room, as well as other environmental community groups like San Diego County Coast Keeper, as well as Environmental Health Coalition, just to name a couple. And continuing our strong partnership with the state is important as we all collectively move forward to implement this plan. So we clearly like the idea of collaboration and partnerships in the plan. In general, there's also a lot to like. We find that this version, thank you, is very responsive to many of our prior comments. We remain very supportive of the focus goals on climate change, equity, biodiversity, and of course the blue economy, which collectively align with our very broad mission. That being said, there's still a lot of work to do, and we need your collective help to achieve our collective aspirations. We're curious how we can work together to modernize our permitting system to allow an easier path forward to deploy nature-based solutions like living shorelines, creating more wetlands and shallow subtidal habitat. We're all very supportive of the idea and concept, and like with many things, it sometimes falls apart during the permitting process. So hopefully outputs of the plan can help with that process. We like the inclusion of beach resiliency and water improvement for our coastal waters, especially given our ongoing challenges in and around the Tijuana River Valley and the U.S.-Mexico region. Thank you all and the council as well for your support on that issue. We want to support and protect our beaches as well as access to them. We're committed to doing our part for emission reduction, focus on advancing electrification, and we're working hard to develop sea level rise adaptation strategies for marine terminals and our tidelands. And in case you didn't know, we do have a MOU with Navy Region Southwest to work on and share information on coastal flooding and sea level rise for San Diego Bay. So we also appreciate the emphasis on resources and funding to address and move forward many of these issues. And finally, I just want to wrap up and say we were able to spend some time, staff from the port as well as our chair, with the controller yesterday, and the port is working on a parallel effort, which is our comprehensive port master plan update, which is a holistic approach to planning on public lands. And we think it could be a contemporary approach that you could also use as an example, looking at local coastal plans. We're including new ideas of how to deal with coastal access, ecology, environmental justice, as well as safety and resiliency. And we'd be happy to talk with any of you as well as continued conversations with Director Gold. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Let's hear from your colleague, Paula Sylvia, followed by Sydney Chamberlain.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Secretary Crowfoot and council members. My name is Paula Sylvia, and I'm the Program Director of Aquaculture and Blue Technology at the Port of San Diego. Building on Jason's comments, I would like to also thank the council and staff for the time and effort that has been dedicated to the strategic plan and for being so responsive to several rounds of recent public comment. Overall, we fully support the inclusive blue economy, and much of the work the port is involved in is in alignment with the plan, similar to many aspects that Jason just talked about. To provide a little bit of background on my program, the port created the Aquaculture and Blue Technology Program 4 years ago to explore environmental and economic opportunities in the aquaculture and the blue technology space. Embedded in this program was the creation of what we call a Blue Economy Business Incubator, which is a non-traditional business incubator that allows the port to partner with early-stage companies in the aquaculture and blue technology space and facilitate pilot projects that addressed existing environmental challenges as well as future opportunities. Fostering sustainable aquaculture and port-related blue tech innovation assists the port to fulfill its public trust responsibility to promote fisheries and commerce, as well as aligning with our mission to enhance and protect the environment. To date, the port has invested $1.4 million in 8 pilot projects, 7 of which specifically addressed environmental issues, including remediating water and sediment contaminants, research on shellfish and seaweed for multiple environmental co-benefits, such as bioremediation, conservation and carbon sequestration, marine debris removal, and replacement of coastal hard armoring with a bioenhancing concrete solution to provide a more nature-based solution to traditional shoreline armoring. From an aquaculture perspective, the program has been conducting several studies, including using spatial planning tools to conduct siting and suitability analyses, as well as habitat interactions analysis with aquaculture gear, baseline shellfish population abundance studies, and baseline shellfish health studies, all to inform future potential of various types of aquaculture that we can support in San Diego, given our complex and mixed-use environment. To this end, we, in conjunction with NOAA's National Ocean Service Center for Coastal and Ocean Sciences, we conducted a variety of spatial planning exercises using tools to detail out a constraints and opportunities analysis for shellfish and seaweed aquaculture in and around San Diego Bay. So not just in the bay, but outside the bay, out to 3 miles up past Point Loma and down south to the Mexican border, essentially creating a geospatial database to avoid major use conflicts such as military navigation in sensitive habitat areas and explore environmental and site suitability for various types of shellfish and seaweed operations, resulting in nearly 10,000 acres of potentially usable space. So that's a lot considering how much use and mixed use we have down in San Diego Bay. Indeed, similar siting analyses for aquaculture have been conducted throughout the state to date, from our efforts in San Diego to shellfish siting off Ventura and also Northern California, as well as detailed spatial studies of aquaculture potential in Southern California by coming out of the Bren School in Santa Barbara. All of these studies are supported by a range of really powerful siting analysis tools and science that can and should be applied to many goals in the strategic plan that reference either mapping current inventory and future habitat space for seagrass meadows and kelp forests as identified in Goal 1 to kelp restoration and habitat mapping throughout Goal Number 3 to perhaps supporting elements of the statewide aquaculture plan identified in Goal Number 4. So lastly, you know, in addition to blue economy elements, the port is alignment with the plan focusing on equity elements, especially as they relate to underserved communities. These are special interests to the port as we provide over $3,000 annually to support environmental education programs and support restoration efforts from lifting shorelines to promoting wetlands restoration. Finally, we value the focus this plan puts on strong and effective partnerships, and we stand ready to assist and participate in the development process of the various elements of the strategic plan. Thank you for letting me go over time.
Thank you, Paula.
Thanks.
And thanks to the Port of San Diego. I think among ports in California, you all deserve the gold star for your level of engagement in OPC, and ports are a critical stakeholder in all of this, so thank you for giving voice to the work you do. Next, we'll hear from Sydney Chamberlain, followed by Nancy Kirshner-Rodriguez.
Good afternoon, Chair Crowfoot and members of the Council. I'm Sydney Chamberlain, and I'm with the Nature Conservancy. You've already heard from our oceans team, but our disaster resilience team is offering comments specifically on the sea level rise adaptation goals. First, we want to extend our thanks to you and your staff for your work on this strategic plan, which establishes bold new goals for conserving and restoring coastal wetlands. OPC and the Nature Conservancy share a commitment to protecting California's coastal habitats, both now and in the future. And the coast of the future will not be the same as the coast of today. This reality is reflected in the strategic plan's coastal habitat goals, which were informed, in part, by a study we completed with the State Coastal Conservancy. This study showed that California's coastal habitats are extremely vulnerable to climate stressors, but that there is a path forward to protecting them. Maintaining our precious coastal habitat in the face of sea level rise will require concerted, sustained action. To that end, we developed a bold and unified plan for protecting California's coast against sea level rise, a vision we call Hope for the Coast. OPC led the state in adopting this vision, and we've worked in close partnership with your team for the past year and a half to turn this vision into actionable commitments. This strategic plan is the first step toward implementation of these commitments, but it cannot be the last. OPC's continued leadership is essential in raising awareness, aligning state agencies, and developing state policy to ensure the protection of California's coastal and ocean resources. This is a critical time to undertake this coordination. The policy landscape is tremendously active around these issues. Climate resilience funding is increasingly in play, with Prop 68 funds and potentially new bond revenue on the horizon, as well as $25 million of proposed greenhouse gas reduction funding to address climate adaptation through research and technical assistance. Momentum is also building in the legislature, where in addition to multiple legislative vehicles, both the Senate and Assembly have subcommittees considering climate resilience. The sea level is rising, and California is waking up to the reality that the time to act is now. State policies need to be aligned and complementary if we are to achieve the bold goals set forth by this new strategic plan, and OPC is ideally positioned to lead in this role. Thank you for the opportunity to work with your team and to provide comments today. We commend OPC for the work that has gone into this strategic plan and strongly support its adoption. We look forward to your continued leadership in protecting California's coastal and ocean resources and stand ready to support efforts to implement the goals laid out by this plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sydney. Nancy Kirshner-Rodriguez, followed by Alfredo Arandayo, who represents our last speaker card. So if you haven't spoke and would like to speak, please submit a speaker card. Nancy.
Good afternoon, Commissioners and Director Gold. Thank you. I am here today on behalf of the Business Network for Offshore Wind. We are a national nonprofit. We're focused exclusively on the development of utility-scale offshore wind and a thriving supply chain, a well-trained workforce, and partnership for a strong blue economy. We want to recognize the important staff work and research that the Ocean Protection Council has already supported, and we continue to work closely with Chris Potter. We're very thankful for the work he's doing with us on our large international partnering forum. We're here today to commend OPC for specifically 4.4.1, and it is truly significant that you are the first statewide entity to put into writing such a significant goal for reaching utility-scale offshore wind project by 2026. We are here to partner with you, support your work, and we just thank you, and we thank particularly Controller Yi for her commitment and championship. It is needed. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Nancy. Alfredo.
So my apologies, Mr. Secretary. I have terrible handwriting. I get that all the time when I'm having to fill out the forms at ARB2. So Alfredo Redondo on behalf of Azul. Really wanted to actually, the benefit of going last is I get to just ditto all the comments that were made beforehand. So I would like to start by aligning all our comments with those made by Audubon, the Nature Conservancy, NRDC. And in particular, wanted to shout out Anna Zivian with Ocean Conservancy for her emphasis on the training aspects of diversity, equity, and inclusion. I think that's a really important comment that we absolutely support. It's really great to see the emphasis on the cross-collaboration throughout the plan among agencies, those grant funding agencies like Coastal Conservancy, infrastructure agencies like Caltrans, et cetera. Really excited about the opportunity to really move forward in a pretty comprehensive and holistic way. And from a Azul perspective, those are all agencies that are going to be a part of the conversation when it comes to things like coastal access, as we have to deal with sea level rise, coastal erosion, and the impacts that it's going to have on, you know, the public's ability to access those sites. Generally, very happy to see that equity has been elevated to the extent that it has in the plan. It's also really telling that, you know, by spring we'll have two coastal agencies, Coastal Commission and Coastal Conservancy, who would have already adopted an EJ policy and would sincerely encourage the council to follow through in similar steps. I think both of those agencies did a really phenomenal job of seeking stakeholder input and making access to those tables and conversations a really big priority, especially for communities that otherwise would have a lot of challenges in coming to spaces like this today. And lastly, I did want to point out one potential opportunity is actually looking at D.C. For a good example. As it turns out, from a few years ago, so a presidential memorandum issued by the Obama administration titled Promoting Diversity and Inclusion in National Parks, National Forests, and Other Public Lands and Waters serves as a really useful model. We've actually seen the benefits of that model as it was implemented. Even in the current administration, those departments and agencies at the federal level, especially the national parks, have continued to make inroads and progress on diversity, equity, and inclusion, both in training, in hiring practices, and promotion practices. And we think it's a useful useful model to look at. And I also know that the Undersecretary had a big hand in that, policy itself. So we know that the makings are there to do the same here in California. So looking forward to that. Thank you again for the opportunity to offer comments. And again, congratulations on a great plan.
Thank you very much. And thanks to everybody for your public comment today, but also for your thoughtful input over recent months. It's actually been a long journey to get us to this point of having a strategic plan that really serves as a roadmap for bold action in coming years. If you recall, at least when some of us joined the OPC, there was a strategic planning process underway. I think we had a really clear, constructive conversation with OPC staff that we wanted to see the plan both sharpened and made more ambitious. And I think you all, Mark and Jan and OPC team, have really accomplished quite a lot. Let's open it up to commissioner comments, questions, and observations as we consider this plan.
Well, first of all, I want to thank all the folks from the public who spoke. A really great range of issues that were raised, and a number of them, you know, we're working on the legislative side, and it's all very closely related to many of the things that are outlined in the strategic plan. I wanted to follow up on a couple things. I know Mr. Jepson, for example, when he was talking about Target 1.2.3, raised some engineering concerns, and I wanted to know if you had any comments, Director Gold, on that issue, and then I've got a couple of things I wanted to talk about.
Thank you, Senator Allen. The issue on ocean acidification, just to remind everybody, has changed pretty dramatically based on the first series of comments. We were much bolder in what was in there before from the standpoint of really trying to almost eliminate coastal discharge. And you may remember we even had a discussion here, I think it was my first meeting, on, you know, we should do it by 2030, we should do it by 2025, sold, you know, and obviously we kept things at 2040. I personally met with CASA and Water Reuse. I feel like we took about 98% of what they recommended. There were a couple of things that were brought up that I think are important. First of all, I may not be an engineer, although I do have a doctorate in environmental science and engineering and have spent half my life in wastewater treatment plants, but I do sleep with an engineer, so I don't know if that gets me anything. Three kids, I guess. A couple things I do want to bring up is that, you know, from the standpoint of the state of the technology on wastewater treatment, which is something I've spent an awful lot of time working on as a professor at UCLA, as well as in my previous life at Heal the Bay, advanced treatment can get you to 90% removal efficiency, and so there's no question that's doable from a technological perspective. We had 90 to 100%, I believe, before. We cut it to 80 to 90 based on comments, so I still feel good about that. The beneficial use component was not originally in the document, so that was something that came from Water Reuse as well as CASA, and so that was a way to sort of deal with moving to beneficial use rather than saying specifically what happens during a rainstorm when you have inflow and infiltration problems and all those other sorts of things. Again, it's a policy. It's not a regulation by any set. It's not even a policy. It's just a goal. And then the last thing, which I guess really hit home for me, was the Rahms-Beck model description. As somebody who at UCLA was the one who actually put that team together and brought it before the state here, I kind of am pretty intimately involved in that issue and have been from its inception. And the characterization couldn't have been more false. And that was something that just sort of struck me. And what I mean by that is it absolutely has been validated and calibrated. There's been more than a dozen papers that have been published on it. Believe me, nothing is tougher than peer review. Some very top journals have accepted articles on this. It doesn't mean modeling can't get better over time. That's the point, you know, is you use them, you improve them over time, and that's something that is a large priority for our staff working with the UCLA, NOAA, University of Washington, and SCORP team moving forward. But I did want to make sure you understand that the model has been completed. It has been validated. We're just running different scenarios right now, which will be extremely helpful. We're working with the State Water Resources Control Board. We're actually meeting with SCORP on the 6th next week to really talk about which scenarios that could really help us to management recommendations on how to move forward on ocean acidification water quality standards for the state of California. But so anyways, I just want to clarify that from the standpoint of really the true best available science. And the last thing on best available science, we didn't write that in there, just like we didn't write collaboration in each and every item, because it's right up front in who we are and our core values as the Ocean Protection Council. If we wrote that we're going to use best available science and that we were going to collaborate with everybody, your document would be twice as long as it is right now. Thank you.
Well, that's helpful. Okay, that does answer, that answers, I think, a lot of the core concerns that were raised. I just want to make a couple extra comments. I mean, I hear all the comments made about resilience. Can't agree more on that. Certainly there's some interesting work happening in the building right now with regards to that topic, both the, with this climate bond that certainly looking at resilience and adaptation, and there's some significant money that's going to be coming that way. We're certainly looking to make sure that OPC has a role in that. And so watch that space and engage in that discussion. I know many of you are already engaged pretty pretty aggressively in that area. Also appreciate all the comments made about trash. I can't, that's obviously something I care a great deal about. We're working really intensely right now on trying to get our waste reduction bills across the finish line. And, I know that we're all trying to get that across the finish line, and that kind of plays into where the OPC will engage and hopefully marry its efforts with CalRecycle's efforts coming out of the successful passage of that bill. Obviously, that's touching wood and hoping that we're able to kind of land that plane. But I certainly want to make sure that there's a close engagement between OPC and Cal EPA and CalRecycle and Natural Resources, when it comes to our waste management efforts coming out of this legislative session. I can only assume that you're all committed to that, but I certainly want to express my strong sense of the importance of that.
Secretary Blumenfeld, Commissioner, or Controller Yee, why don't we go with Jared? He's closer to the mic.
We all have mics. First of all, congratulations to the team. I think it is huge improvements over the first version, and we're all in this room, and I want to add to Senator Allen's thanks for everyone that came today that works day in, day out on this issue. As I think we all have spent the year on OPC really understanding the impacts of climate change, the impacts of land-based sources of marine pollution, really there's an urgency to this, and I think this strategic plan meets that urgency by having clear, articulated goals that allow us to understand where we're going, how we get there. It kind of strikes a really good balance of doing a lot, but not doing so much that it's impossible to achieve. So thank you. I really, really want to – this is not an easy thing to do, and the number of people that came up and really said how spot on this is a testament to everyone that worked on it. I was very struck by – the comments around diversity, inclusion, and equity. And so I think it would be useful to put a goal back in, and I have some language, which would be to promote and invest in staff training and diversity, equity, and inclusion with a particular emphasis on environmental justice. That's very close to the goal that we had in there before. I think it, even though it's an internal goal, that internal goal has reflection out onto the broader world. And so as we get later on, Wade, I can propose that to the team. And then the only other of the amendments that were proposed on 1.2.3, I think, Mark spoke, Director Gold spoke clearly about the best available science versus latest scientific results. I think we should keep in latest scientific results. as well with viability. I think viability is baked into what we mean by beneficial use. So the only change that I think I'd be pleased to consider and put forward is to change the word sewage to wastewater, since it is used below in coastal wastewater recycling. So I think that does clarify and create some consistency that could be helpful. So I think there are that change could legitimately be made. And I'd also concur with Mark, and I think John Bishop from the State Board said it. You know, we have spent a lot of time in the State and Regional Water Resources Control Boards understanding this particular issue, and we have got to the place where we are comfortable with and agree with this target, and I think it conforms with the view that we have about how to proceed in this area. So although there's been quite a lot of public comment on it, I think it does represent a viable path forward and one that we should all push towards.
Can I just ask a question on that, just to...
Without putting the word viable in.
And so to me, the difference between latest scientific results, which is currently in the text, and best available science is almost like a distinction without a difference. That being said, I don't think this is a situation where they're asking us to add something that's not there, but to use a term that is used sort of throughout the document. So I'm just, Mark, if you could explain, you know, really what is the challenge? Because my philosophy is where we can collaborate with folks that are, you know, coming in with comments, I would like to do that. And so I just don't really understand what we lose by putting best available science in versus latest scientific results. So I just wanted to... Just I wanted to raise that, and it's not a hill I'll die on, but it does seem like where we can meet, stakeholders, it would be helpful to do so.
Yeah, that's why I was giving you the context of sort of where we started versus where we ended with those same stakeholder groups was, you got 95% of what you wanted, including the stuff that was substantial. Now, the latest, I have to admit, it sort of hits me in conjunction with ocean acidification, because of what we just found out on Dungeness crab. We could go through a whole process, have some sort of scientific advisory team say, let's use best available science, but you might not, you know, and then all of a sudden a study like that comes out from Dr. Benarsik, and wait, that wasn't vetted by that team, and does it? So that's why I said it's our culture. Everything we're doing is best available science, and this is over and above, is that we're also looking at the latest science on top of it. So I'm really looking at it as a layer cake in that regard, and not one versus the other, and that was really the intent in how we wrote it.
That's helpful. Thank you. Controller Yee.
Thank you, Secretary Crowfoot. I want to thank all of the speakers who came forward, and if the testimony demonstrated anything, is really how multifaceted this plan is, and in addition to its ambition and the goals. I wanted to follow on to Secretary Blumenfeld's comments about equity and inclusion, and really appreciated the public comment about that. And I think really to just assure folks that I think the state of California really is underway significantly with respect to environmental justice. As was stated, the Coastal Commission adopting an environmental justice policy, State Lands Commission having adopted an environmental justice policy. And I want to thank Secretary Blumenfeld, because the training capacity was really provided by Cal EPA. So we are not going to be reinventing the wheel on this front at all, and in fact have been making great progress in that respect. I know we're talking about a lot about, and the plan really, I think, beautifully identifies where there are going to be likely partnerships among state entities. But I wanted to raise something that really was triggered by the Port of San Diego's comments about local planning processes, because I don't think the plan is intended to really kind of put any local planning process upset any of that. But in fact, I think there could be some instructive elements that come out of local planning processes as well. And the Port of San Diego is unique, and we've appreciated our partnership at State Lands Commission with that port. And I might just suggest that perhaps one of the future OPC meetings could be in San Diego, so we could have a little bit more kind of on-the-ground view of what's happening there. But these master planning processes, I think, most certainly encompasses a lot of the goals that we have articulated in this plan. I think could be an even more enhanced collaboration, going forward. So just not to ignore that. And then lastly, I would say, and I talked to Director Gold about this, because as much as I think everything we do here is about partnership and collaboration, obviously some of this is going to require additional resources. And I just want to be sure that we are publicly identifying those as they come up. I would love to see the opportunity of even perhaps advancing joint budget change proposals if that's you know, required. But I think we have to be real about just the amount of resources that may be required to carry out such an ambitious program. So obviously we'll be helpful in that regard. But it goes without saying that this is a heavy lift in so many ways, and yet I think we're all really very, very wedded to being successful in carrying through on what's been articulated. But also I think part of that is just being completely transparent about the fiscal needs going forward as well.
Thank you, Controller. I would add, I think we all recognize the importance of resources to meet these goals, and these resources do require significant investment. We hope one of the vehicles for that investment is this climate resilience bond, because if you look at our wetland restoration goals, so many of these goals, we actually require significant infusion of investment. So we'll be working hard in partnership with the legislature to really prepare a general obligation bond for voter consideration in the fall, just given how critical it is, not only for this area of climate resilience, but really across the state in other areas as well. Good. Yes, Assembly Member.
Thank you. I think this is absolutely a remarkable document and very, very important, because it's more than just aspirational, which is where a lot of the conversations have started, but lays out a real roadmap for steps that can be taken. And I think its breadth and its benefit is that it does engage and contemplate engagement with other state agencies in order to accomplish its goals. Ocean Protection Council is not a regulatory agency, but a lot of the implementation will be relying on the regulatory agencies. And for an organization like this council to have created this framework, I think is very important. And I would highly encourage this body to not step back from the goals that are stated in here, because this will be the document against which progress and implementation gets measured. And if we start to walk any of these goals back, then that measurement will ultimately suffer, or the implementation will suffer against that measurement. And the case in point is the resilience bonds that are being talked about, because so far in those conversations, there's very little that's discussed about how we ensure. We talk about those resilience bonds, but there's not really any measurements or standards about what resilience means and how we know that if we're taking that money and spending that money throughout the state of California, that money is going to be spent against a standard of what resilience is. That's one of the things that this document does, because if investments are made against this plan, we know that we are moving towards resilience goals because we have established some of those goals. So in the legislative context, I am concerned about that sort of lack of accountability. And if we're not careful, that bond just becomes the next in a long series of bonds that we're going to spend money on everybody's existing priorities. May not be a bad thing, but how we know those are resilience-based expenditures and helping us meet California's resilience obligation, we don't always know, and we're not ultimately quite there yet. On the equity piece, I think that piece is really very important, and I will remind us all that over the last number of years, the discussions around the greenhouse gas reduction funds, the cap and trade system, and then the transportation Senate Bill 1 that was passed and then defended at the ballot box, the environmental justice community was at the table through a lot of that process. And in the final negotiation, everything that community asked for in both of those exercises was taken off the table. So they were there for the conversations, but not there for the final product. So I think for us, we need to make sure that we are building in real equity, not just in words. And I think that's the direction we're going. And I think the Secretary Blumenfeld's suggestion is pretty good, because how can we say that and expect that of others if we're not going to expect that of ourselves? So if we're really going to embrace the the environmental justice aspect of it, we also need to make sure that we are setting standards and show that community that they're not just welcome at the table, but they're welcome in the final conversations and whatever gets negotiated. So I think this is an absolute, I commend staff. This is an absolutely remarkable document. I think this is going to be a roadmap that I hope will be a living document that we can learn. As we've learned, there's already, even if this passes today, which I really hope it does, we know that these standards are already being overrun by circumstances that are happening out in the real world. So we need to keep looking back to these standards and even have a venue to check on this, modify them, and look forward so that we are using what is currently available, not just sort of standards that have been well vetted in the scientific community, but what do we know as it's developing? Because this crisis that is happening, the climate crisis, is going to overtake us. Well, it is overtaking us. How much really depends on the actions that we get to take. So I highly encourage this body to pass this, to put a stake in the ground, and keep moving forward.
Points well taken. Thank you so much. Yeah, Jordan.
Hey. Hi. Well, first of all, thank you to everyone for the warm reception to my child. Oh, closer. So something happened to my chair, so it's in the bottom setting, so I actually can't really reach the mic. I feel like I'm sitting with the kid at the big kids table. But thank you to everyone for the warm reception to my child. Speaking of climate change, it's the worst thing I could have done for climate. But his first book was Hello, Ocean Friends, so hopefully he will be a future ocean champion. I want to just join and echo the commendations for this plan. I think it's fantastic. I think two things in particular. One is the emphasis on setting ambitious visions, but then working with partners to achieve them. And I just want to highlight one. Obviously, there are the explicit state partners that are mentioned in the plan, and I think it's really helpful to actually identify those and highlight that we do not think this is something we either can or should do on our own. This is all dependent on partnerships. But also, Mark, you've emphasized this, but the collaboration is beyond just the state, and there are many, many local partners, whether local governments or other local entities that have to be partnered with in order to succeed on these different fronts. And as you said, that's an overarching principle. It isn't necessarily called out with each target, but I do just want to emphasize the critical importance of that. The second is I think the plan strikes a great balance between setting specific actions for those targets where we know what needs to be done, and then not essentially providing false specificity when we're still not sure what exactly to do. Some of these, we know what our goal is, and we have to figure out what the action is. And so I would essentially just both encourage and or ask what the plan is for treating this as a living document and how to update those as we do figure out what those additional actions are over time. I think that'll be a critical part in terms of obviously achieving some of these goals, and would just love to hear if you already have thoughts about how to do that.
Well, one of the comments that we haven't heard, which we've talked about a lot internally, was that there's a little bit of vulnerability if this is a plan to plan. And in each one of those 10 to 12 plans that we say we're going to develop, it was exactly as you pointed out, which is we don't want to presume the best way to solve the kelp crisis until we work with the community. Not only just the scientific community, but as you're going to hear later today, with the fishing community as well, and fish and wildlife, and really trying to figure out what the heck makes the most sense in this situation. And the same thing on wetlands, et cetera, et cetera. So I agree with the concept, and that's really how we tried to put it together. Was to not get ahead of ourselves in many areas, but to just basically give ourselves firm deadlines that we had funding to proceed with on developing some of these plans as soon as possible.
And I'll just add, one aspect that I'm really proud of in this plan is the fact that we hold ourselves accountable for reaching targets by certain dates. And I think we shouldn't be afraid to, in a very transparent way, update and measure our progress on those dates, and where we are not able to achieve them for whatever reason, be clear about that, but then really use this as a document to hold ourselves accountable for making progress. Secondly, I'll just underscore Jordan's point about, you know, the power of this is not that it's just an OPC strategic plan. And if you look at the title, it's called Strategic Plan to Protect California's Coast and Ocean. And it really does rely on partners to OPC stepping up. And huge thanks to Fish and Wildlife, Water Board, Coastal Commission, Coastal Conservancy, and so many others, even outside of state government, for collaborating and for their patience and trust with the OPC to actually put this stuff to paper that's going to require work and accountability on each of those entities. So I think our ability to succeed in this relies on continuing to collaborate really across agencies and beyond. So I know Secretary Blumenfeld has a couple of recommended amendments to this plan. Are there any other final comments before we consider those amendments and take up adoption of the plan? Yeah, Senator.
Well, I just realized I jumped into question that I want to just echo the chorus of enthusiasm for this, and I want to personally thank Mark for, I think, engaging in a very diligent and thoughtful outreach process with all the members, with a lot of stakeholders, and there's you know, and the staff, of course, who worked with him on this. I mean, it really does reflect a great deal of homework and thoughtfulness, and it's exciting. It's exciting to see it all out on paper. Now it's, of course, up to us to turn into reality, which is the hard part.
Excellent. So, Jared, can you make, if you would, a motion to adopt those amendments for consideration?
Yeah. So I would make a motion to adopt the plan with the following amendments: a new goal which would read to promote and invest in staff training in diversity, equity, and inclusion with a particular emphasis on environmental justice. So that would be a new goal. Starting in 2020.
Good. So maybe let's first just consider that amendment and ask if anybody has any questions or comments. And if not, I'm hoping that I can take a voice vote on the acceptance of this amendment. First of all,
I have
Jen.
A question. Sorry to interrupt, Chair Crawford, if it's okay. Just clarification, you said goal, but I think the intent is either an action or a target or an objective. So with your discretion, we can...
Well, with your discretion, whatever you think.
Thank you.
What would you suggest?
Yeah.
I think it's an action.
Great.
Thank you.
That's helpful. So recognizing this is an action, the action that Secretary Blumenfeld just articulated, if we can, all in favor of that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so we'll consider that amendment approved.
Great. And then the second amendment is a one-word change in target 1.2.3, the second line where it says loading and or phasing out coastal. We'll delete the word sewage and replace it with wastewater.
Thank you. Seeing no questions or comments, all in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? So we will accept that amendment. And then finally, on the motion to adopt the strategic plan, is there a motion? Okay. Controller
Second.
Yee, seconded by, we'll say, Senator Allen. All in favor of the adoption of this strategic plan, say aye.
Aye.
Oh, sorry. Emiko, thank you. So we all consider ourselves equal here, but technically a couple of us are
a little less equal.
Are ex officio. So let me just restate the motion to adopt the plan made by Controller Yee, seconded by Secretary Blumenfeld. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, the strategic plan is adopted. So under the category of making progress on these ambitious goals, actions, and objectives, let's move on to the next item, which is the consideration of authorization to disperse Prop 68 funds for urchin removal to support potential kelp forest recovery. Mike.
All right.
Good afternoon, Council members. Mike Escrow, Marine Ecosystems Program Manager. Today, I'm really honored. I'm excited and I'm honored to present a project that I think really represents a major step forward in our effort to address the kelp crisis here in California. And this project, I think, is a really unique collaboration between OPC, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, commercial fishermen, and other North Coast community partners. And I also want to give a huge shout out to James Ray, who's in the back there. From the department, I think James is probably sick of talking to me multiple times a day, every day for the last 6 months.
James, give a wave so we see who you are. Thank you.
I'm not sure that's going to change, James, but thank you so much. So, next slide here. So, as we know, California's North Coast has been devastated recently by declines in bull kelp. Here you can see what a healthy bull kelp ecosystem is supposed to look like, a lush forest that supports a diverse community. And then here, if we could play this video, you can see, maybe I can do it from here. Yeah, there we go. In this video, you can see what things look like now. So urchins, which are grazers, these purple sea urchins here have mowed pretty much everything down to bare rock. And if you can believe it, up on the North Coast, this is actually fairly low density. In some places, they're so thick that they actually sit spine to spine. Here you can see trends in kelp cover over the last decade. Kelp essentially disappeared in 2014, and disastrously, it just has not come back. These declines, as we know, are unprecedented, and they've been attributed to what scientists call a perfect storm of changing ocean conditions. Starting in 2014, temperatures along the North Coast spiked due to this warm water mass here, known as the blob, which was followed by severe El Nino conditions that caused those warm water temperatures to persist. And warm water is really bad for bull kelp. Bull kelp's extremely sensitive to changes in temperature. Just a couple of degrees off of normal can cause it to basically dissolve. And it was kind of a double whammy because increased water temperatures are also thought to have played a part in sea star wasting disease. You can see a picture here that was kind of this mysterious disease that wiped out sea star populations along the West Coast starting in 2014. Sea stars are a major predator of purple sea urchins. And as you can see here in this reef check survey data, with no sea stars to keep them in check, purple sea urchin populations have exploded. And as those purple sea urchin populations have increased, bull kelp has crashed. So why does this matter? Bull kelp is obviously a foundational species, right? It provides habitat. It buffers the coastline against waves and storms. It also serves as a major food source for many different species. And one of those species you can see here, unfortunately, just shells remaining, red abalone, right? With no kelp to eat, red abalone on the North Coast are essentially starving to death. And their numbers have declined so substantially that the red ab fishery was closed in 2017. The red urchin fishery, you can see a red urchin here among all these purples, has also been impacted. And this fishery collapsed in 2015 when those red urchins were unable to compete for resources with the hardier purples. But this is about more than just fisheries. I think this is really about the loss of a culture, the loss of an entire way of life on the North Coast. I think maybe nothing makes this point more poignantly to me than this picture here of subsurface progression. This is the Mendocino Coast's only dive shop, a Fort Bragg institution. They closed their doors at the end of last year after 42 years in business. Huge loss in biodiversity, also cultural losses. So what can we do in the face of such overwhelming devastation, right? I mean, we obviously don't have the resources to restore hundreds of miles of coastline, but the science is pretty clear that restoring a network of small patches of bull kelp might be able to help preserve the seed bank, essentially ensuring that if and when ocean conditions improve, bull kelp at least has a fighting chance to come back. And we know that urchin removal can be an effective method of kelp restoration, and no one can harvest urchins better than those commercial urchin divers that I talked about before, who've largely been unable to fish since the collapse of the red urchin fishery a few years ago. So this project will put those divers back to work to remove urchins in support of kelp restoration at three sites in Mendocino County as a pilot project for 1 year to start this spring. And we're going to do this in a science-informed way. Reef Check California, which is a citizen science nonprofit, will manage this project. And in collaboration with us here at OPC, the department, as well as a bunch of our academic partners, Reef Check will develop an appropriate experimental design that includes monitoring to ensure that this effort is producing scientifically reliable results. We all hope that this effort will bring back kelp, right? The dynamics are really complex out there. And while we can't guarantee the return of kelp, what we do know is that this project will at least provide a scientific basis for evaluating the effectiveness of large-scale urchin removal as a kelp restoration tool. And this is going to directly inform management actions as we look beyond just this project to protect kelp statewide. I'll close with this picture, which represents three generations here of North Coast abalone divers. And to me, this is really what this project is all about. I think today the council is positioned to take the first step in this fight to protect healthy kelp forests for their intrinsic value, for us, for those of us who like to dive in kelp forests and who like to eat abalone, but also for those who come after us. So to that end, staff is recommending that you approve the disbursement of $499,951 in Prop 68 funds to Reef Check to support this project, and this is in direct alignment with the kelp objective in OPC's new strategic plan. So thank you so much for your consideration. I look forward to hearing some public comment on this, and after that I'll be happy to answer any questions that council members might have. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mike. We do have substantial public comment, and I'd suggest that we hear from that to inform the questions we might have. So let's hear first from James Ray from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, followed by Tristan McChote.
Good afternoon, council members. So my name is James Ray. I am responsible for coordinating the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's kelp restoration and recovery efforts throughout the state. I don't want to spend too much time today because Mike has already really outlined the problem that we're facing on the North Coast and to some degree throughout the state, and he's already done a good job at letting you guys know what's at stake here. So I'll just provide some comments in full-throated support of this project. So as you know, kelp forest restoration throughout the state is a high priority for CDF&W. In the long term, we hope to develop a cohesive statewide kelp management plan. However, in the short term, and to help inform that management plan, we're working closely with OPC, with California Sea Grant, and with many other partners to try and identify the most effective kelp management restoration tools. The project that you're considering today is a critical part of that process, the evaluation process of trying to determine what kind of tools we have available to us to tackle these issues, both on the North Coast, but then potentially more expansively throughout the whole state. So the project that you're considering is one of the primary restoration recommendations from the Sonoma-Mendocino Bull Kelp Recovery Plan, which was a plan led by the Greater Farallones Association in collaboration with CDF&W and other stakeholders. This plan is also, the project that you're considering today is also a very strong collaboration locally between commercial urchin divers, the recreational community, NGOs, as well as state and federal entities. So by funding this project today, you're going to enable us to scientifically evaluate on the ground large-scale kelp restoration methods. The outcomes of this project are therefore going to have implications for how we tackle restoration for kelp on the North Coast, but also potentially how we approach kelp restoration throughout the state. So with that being said, and thanks to everybody else who's going to follow me with public comments today in support of this project, CDF&W fully supports this project and would respectfully urge you to fund it. Thanks.
Thank you so much, James, for all your work on this. Tristan McChote, followed by Grant Downey.
Good afternoon, Council, and Californians here today and watching online right now. My name is Tristan McHugh. I'm the North Coast Regional Manager for Reef Check California, the co-chair to the Mendocino MPA Collaborative Network, and a Kelper partner. I live in Fort Bragg, and I'm honored to be here today on behalf of Reef Check California. To begin, I would like to thank the OPC for considering this proposal and for identifying the opportunity for Californians to take an active role in kelp restoration efforts in the North Coast. And we are grateful for your consideration. Reef Check divers have been monitoring the North Coast waters for the past 13 years and have documented the dramatic decline in the biodiversity on reefs throughout the region. And it's not just us documenting these declines. In fact, the health of the kelp ecosystems are being challenged globally, and the global ecosystem itself is changing. However, local awareness of ecosystem changes is a window into global awareness of large-scale issues. We have the ability right here, right now, to conduct a novel project in a region where little systematic attention has been previously focused. Our intervention may ultimately catalyze a reverse shift from invertebrate to algal-dominated reefs while engaging public participation. Adoption of this proposal will encourage Californians to do something in a controlled, unified, and organized effort at sites that have the best chance of success, and we must start here. This plan is our best shot at answering two fundamental questions that have preoccupied us. Can we remove urchins from North Coast reefs? And if we do, will kelp return? The objectivity and careful collection and analysis of observations will play a vital role in how we choose to move forward with kelp restoration strategies statewide and help us evaluate the cost benefits of human intervention in an enormously dynamic oceanic environment. Over the past 2 years, there have been serious efforts to remove urchins, but what is needed now is a hand-in-hand coordination between removals and monitoring, as the Council itself has recognized. We are grateful to the Council for highlighting the importance of monitoring to inform and guide our removal efforts and evaluate their effects. Thank you for recognizing kelp ecosystem loss as a priority and in your strategic plan and involving Californians in the efforts to understand and address it. Thank you.
Thank you, Tristan, and thanks for ReefCheck's partnership in developing this proposal.
Thank you.
Grant Downey, followed by Pat Foley.
Hello, councilmen. My name is Grant Downey, and I am a second-generation California urchin diver. I am a current urchin diver on the north coast of California, and there's only a handful of us left. I'm a local Mendocino Coast resident, and I'm raising my family there. I support the project at hand. I've been a full-time commercial urchin diver for 11 years, and in the last 6 years, I've seen a lot of change. If something isn't done soon, I don't know if I will be able to continue as an urchin diver in my area. I strongly support getting divers in the water. There are a lot of older and other unemployed urchin divers that have found other work other places. I hope in the future the budget can allow for more divers to enter the water to help get the purples out, and I hope for a more sustainable daily wage for the commercial divers involved. I just want to make the point that I make my living picking red sea urchins, and that's where I am today, and that's how I am raising my family on the Mendocino Coast. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for your potential involvement in this and for coming down to make your voice heard. We'll hear from Pat Foley, followed by Josh Russo.
Good afternoon. I'm Pat Foley. I'm a sport diver, longtime family heritage for ab diving. My two grandkids will be the fourth generation ab diving if it does come back. So I mostly want to just thank OPC and specifically Mike Escrow for all his hard work. Thanks for getting in the water with us and seeing what's going on under there. I'm definitely in favor of funding for the removal efforts. It is going to be a coordinated effort, a lot of work for the sport divers and especially the commercial divers. I do look forward for more volunteer work with Josh Russo and the Watermen's Alliance. And what I really like about this, I'm thrilled about this, is ReefCheck's involvement. We will need to follow scientific protocol. So thank you again.
Thank you so much. Josh Russo, followed by Patrick Downey.
Thank you, Council. My name is Joshua Russo. I'm the president of the Watermen's Alliance. I've actually been working on this project for a long time. Since the department came out with the perfect storm briefing in 2014, I think I've been asking for the recreational limit to be raised. And in 2018, they did, giving recreational divers the opportunity to participate in the effort to help our kelp. I've also been greatly involved with funding and coordinating the commercial divers. And today I'm here to say thank you. I'm here to say thank you to everybody that's been involved with this, the commercial divers that have all been working at a reduced daily wage to make this thing happen, to get it on the table for you today, the department personnel, Craig and James, that have been working tirelessly on this and putting up with me. Michael Escrow has done an amazing job on this project. I want to say that I'm thoroughly impressed with this man as an individual, and I'm happy that he's in our government and working for us. And as far as ReefCheck getting the science, I've been working with them for probably 3 or 4 years, or actually 4 or 5 years now, first on the abalone management FMP and now on this. And I have been entirely impressed with that entire organization, with the integrity of the scientists and the people involved. Jan Freewald, Dan Abbott, Tristan McHugh, and Anna Newman, and Craig previously. The recreational divers that have been involved with this, the sacrifices that they're making in this project, coming out and diving in cold weather, bad weather, and everything. So I'm here today to just say thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Josh, and for all the work of the Watermen's Alliance. Let's hear from Patrick Downey, followed by David Goldenberg.
Hello, council members. I hope I don't cry. I get real emotional talking about this topic. My name's Patrick Downey. I'm a current active commercial fisherman and sea urchin diver. Of course, I'm not currently diving today. I took time out to come over here and speak with you. I support this project. Anything we can do should help, I hope. I would like to help this whole thing any way I can. We have 3 boats on the coast of Mendocino County in Fort Bragg ready to go. A lot of them just sit idle because there's not a lot of fishing involved right now. We pay our taxes, we pay our slip rent, we support our community in every way we can. Our community has changed a lot since this has happened. I've been diving since 1980 commercially. I was certified to dive when I was 16 years old. I've never lived more than 2 miles away from the ocean. This is hard for me to be away from the ocean, but there's a river right over there, so I feel pretty good.
Probably not the same.
I think a lot better when I'm underwater. I just came up with this while I've been sitting back there, so this just kind of off the wing. But sea urchin harvesting is my family's livelihood. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for making it down here. That's a big deal. It means a lot to us. David Goldenberg, followed by Natalie Kalk.
Good afternoon, Secretary Crowfoot, members of the council and staff. My name is David Goldenberg. I'm the executive director of the California Sea Urchin Commission. The commission is a state marketing entity under the California Department of Food and Agriculture with co-oversight with the Department of Fish and Wildlife as well. We represent all the divers and processors of the state of California. I'd like to just say that we fully support and we commend the actions of the council to consider funding this urchin removal program to bring back the kelp. We have been seeing this cycle for quite a number of years, and the industry has lived through them, but this cycle of kelp loss has been extended for a long, long time. And in fact, the commission sought, with Governor Brown's help, a declaration of disaster from the Secretary of Commerce. And so that was just approved in September of 2019 for the years 2016-2017. And we're still waiting for the federal government to issue how much money they're going to be allocating, and the spend plan. But we would expect that some of the money would go for direct payments to the fishermen that have been displaced, but also for restoration of the kelp and the ecosystem. And so we are also going to be applying for disaster for 2018-2019. So, Secretary, I would be asking for your assistance to help with the governor's gubernatorial declaration. But regarding this proposal, the commission did not take an official position on it. We have not met, but I could say from personally that the commission would support this. And we know that there are 3 test areas, and so we will look to the divers and locally to tell us what best recommendations they have. And you're probably going to hear different methods of collection, whether it's picking or an airlift, or in Tom Ford in Santa Monica, they also did smashing. So I would suggest that those considerations be looked at as different methods to see which ones might work best. And then hopefully in the future when we have disaster funding, we can help support and supplement the work that's being done in the North Coast.
Thanks so much. Quick question, given your role. We've been educated over recent months that, you know, the red urchin are obviously, you know, commercialized, but yes, these purple urchin can't be. And so I just wonder if there's any work or research happening around how the heck to commercialize these purple urchin and create an economic incentive to get them out of the water.
There is an organization out of Canada, but also or Japan, where they're looking at taking some purple urchins, feeding them in a mariculture situation, but they can't take them all. Mm-hmm. And then that would help get some of them. And some of the funding that they would have would go back into restoration. But this, we're talking about gazillion numbers of purples that are just taking over the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Secretary Blumenfeld has an idea, but we'll have you hold off. Natalie Kolk, followed by Tom Trumper.
Good afternoon again, council members. Natalie Kolk, Associate Director for California Coastkeeper Alliance. We're very supportive of the OPC approving funds for this project. As you know, the recent decline in bull kelp on the Northern California coast is an environmental emergency, and we're grateful that OPC staff and leadership are taking swift action to respond. We look forward to the results of this project and hope that this can serve as a first step toward more long-term state funding to incentivize the harvest of purple urchins from kelp forests and otherwise restore kelp forest health. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Natalie. Tom, followed by Doug Jung.
Good afternoon. My name's Tom Trumper. I've been diving sea urchins since the 70s, and I've been processing out of Fort Bragg since the 90s. And I've got over 30,000 hours on the bottom, and I've never seen changes like that I've seen in the last 5 years. I've got three sons, a daughter, and grandsons in this business with me, and it's our whole life. And I really thank you guys for proposing this and giving us a chance to help. And there are some things we need to work out, and we are working on them. And I just want to thank you for it.
Thank you, Tom, for all your work over the years and your engagement in this as well.
Thank you.
Let's hear next from Doug, and I think Doug has the distinction of being the person that since the early last year has come to each and every meeting and really for many of us sort of raised the red flag on this crisis.
Well, thank you, Councilman members, and especially Secretary Crowfoot and Secretary Blumenfeld. Yeah, it's my pleasure being here. When I first came here to complain and bring up the picture of how bad things were, you actually listened. Not only did you listen, Secretary Blumenfeld, I am so impressed because we the people, we're not used to people at this level. The Ocean Protection Council, Mike, and other members of the Ocean Protection Council actually coming out and investigating. You came out, strapped your tanks on. You actually saw what we were crying about, what the people were moaning about all these years, and you listened. And so I want to thank you. I want to thank you all for putting boots on the ground. And this is what we're talking about, putting boots on the ground and balancing it with science. This is what we want. It's science is supposed to protect the resource for the people. So here it is. If we can both do this and make science work and actually do something to mitigate this absolute devastation that's occurring on our coast that's going to affect generations, we are so thankful that you're doing something. You know, 30 years ago, my dad's boat capsized. He was a commercial fisherman. And we were real poor, and so the sea sustained us. And so we grew up loving the sea. And he would be crying now at what is happening. He wouldn't be able to believe what is actually happening to, you know, his ocean, the ocean that he wanted to protect, that he loved. And if he could say anything about that, he would say, this is a great first step. Please continue on. We need to save the seed stock. We need to save the resource. We need to build it up for the children. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Doug. Next, we'll hear from John Holcomb, and then followed by our last speaker, John Duffy. John Duffy.
Thank you for what you're doing for the ocean by
supporting the removal of purple urchins. It's my first opportunity to see the people who have actually put their money where their mouth is, except for the Watermen's Alliance and the Fish and Game Commission in the past. I've been in the commercial fishery, diving in urchins and abalone for 46 years, and not as many hours as Tom, only 19,000 hours underwater. But the remarkable team that you have supported, that is the sport and commercial fishermen joined together, that's never happened in all my life, and I never expected it would. We tried 1980 at San Miguel Island planting abalone. We tried four times, and we finally got it down, but that's then, this is now. We expect to clear two areas this year. I want you, as Wade suggested, to revisit this issue in 2, 4, and 6 months. The sooner you do it, the sooner you will see results, which is all that matters to me. I'm sure that's all that matters to you, too, because if we're taking the state's money, the people of California are supporting us, and we don't produce, I don't want any part of it. And I'm assuring you that I intend, as every other diver I know on the North Coast, to impress you with what we will do with what little we have to prove the concept. And I can't thank the people in the Fish and Game Department enough. I still call it Fish and Game Department. But thank you very much for your support.
Thank you, John, for all your leadership on this. And then let's hear from John Duffy.
Good afternoon, Secretary Crowfoot, members and staff of the Commission. My name is John Duffy. I'm a retired Department of Fish and Game / wildlife biologist. I've been retired for 17 years. I worked for the Department and the Fish and Game Commission for 38 years. I've been actively involved in sea urchin control and kelp restoration for 54 years. And I've been an active diver for 65 plus years. I'm here today because I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with John Holcomb about the meeting, and I'm here to offer my support, especially with Dr. Gold's comments regarding using sport and commercial divers' knowledge, skills, and abilities to make the best use of this project. And I wish you great success. Thank you.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for your almost four decades of state service and all the work that you continue to do. You might have more than 30. Well, you, Tom's got 30,000 hours underwater. You probably have several thousand as well.
I may have between 5,000 and 10,000,
okay.
But a far
you're a newcomer.
Mere speck of what these guys, commercial guys, do.
Jared said all of those hours working in state government is sort of underwater. So listen, huge thanks to everybody that came, particularly those of you that came from the North Coast, and for your getting us this far. I, for one, am really impressed and energized by how far we've come in the last year. Partnership with Fish and Wildlife, our Mike and the OPC staff, and, of course, the commercial and sport divers. It's a pretty remarkable step. Let me open it up to commissioner questions or comments on this proposed funding action.
I just want to echo the voices that we heard in public comment for Mike Esgrove. Mike has really done an outstanding job, and I think while OPC has a small staff, all the staff do a really fantastic job in working with community, working with all of you as individuals. Like, as much as I was excited about the strategic plan, and I think you heard that, you know, the plan is only as good as its implementation, it's really gratifying to see in the same meeting that we're able to take clear, decisive action on this issue. I'm super excited to vote for it and to see the work, as we heard. I agree, we need to hear soon about how it's working, how we can improve it. It's really an experiment that, with ReefCheck, we'll be able to get some great data and metrics that we can compare against other plots in different places. The idea that I had was, just because when I was up with Mark and Mike and other folks diving, they're very purple, these urchins, and to the extent you crush them up, it'd be kind of cool to have a purple path day in Sacramento where you get all these crushed urchins, put them on the pathways of the Capitol, and play Prince during it. So that's my idea of bringing some publicity. Because no one sees it underwater, right? Only the people who spend these thousands of hours diving. So bringing them up, seeing that just the scale is incredible, how many you can collect in an hour. So some visual representation of what we've brought up from below that's really devastating the kelp, I think, would be cool.
I think if you took a poll in state government, Jared Blumenfeld would easily win for the most creative out-of-the-box thinking. But I will say that, you know, as we talk about this, somebody likened this crisis to, like, losing our redwoods. And if we lost our redwoods, just how visible that was and how iconic that that ecosystem is to our state, you know, there would be an uproar. The challenge is, of course, this is invisible unless you spend, you know, part of your life underwater. So I will underscore the importance of Jared's point, which is we have to figure out ways to really elevate this as a crisis so more Californians understand what's at stake. Yeah, Jordan.
I actually just want to add my thanks to this. As a Mendocino native, I grew up surfing on Casper, down in Casper. It's where I learned to surf badly, but I did learn. Playing with bull kelp that washed up on Portuguese Beach and eating seafood down in Noya Harbor. So just want to add my thanks to the action being taken on this, Mike, to your leadership on this, and for everyone who's lending their time. It's pretty devastating to think of what's happening up there. So just a general round of thanks for everyone on this.
Thank you, Jordan. Controller.
Thank you. I also want to thank the speakers who came forward because I think sometimes we don't recognize the economic impact that this has. I mean, we're all focused on the science and what needs to be done, but obviously this has been devastating local economies as well. So thank you for hanging in there with us.
Yeah. Dr. Golden.
Thank you. Just to add to that, and I know this is obvious to everyone in the room, but you know, the moving testimony from the people who were impacted, I mean, it just makes you realize, you know, how different this situation is. I mean, I've spent my whole career dealing with coastal pollution, and if you clean up coastal pollution, then everything heals and gets better. And this is a different situation. These are climate victims, and these are people who have lost their livelihoods because of decisions we've all made that have had global impacts. And you just don't, when you're there and you go diving and you know, worst dive I've ever had, thank you very much. you know, just because it was so damn depressing, it does make you feel a little bit helpless from the standpoint of the fact that what's occurring all over the world is having an impact in such a pristine, gorgeous location, and just impacting so many people on a day-to-day basis. And so obviously, I think everybody in this room is deeply moved by the testimony that was given, and all I can say is I just hope it's enough, and I hope that, you know, this Hail Mary, so to speak, you know, 5 years into this crisis, and it makes you realize we have to get so much better at responding to these crises quicker than we are in this situation. But it's great that we've done this in, you know, 6 months to get to this point. I think is record time for government. And, you know, I just really hope it makes the difference that we're all really hoping for. Thank you.
Yeah, well put. I'd say, you know, the opposite of throwing up our hands, we're figuring it out and trying to, you know, and working with the local folks that know this resource the best to get action going that's informed by science. So with that said, can we consider an action on this authorization to disperse these Prop 68 funds for urchin removal? Mm-hmm. Okay, Controller moves. Jordan seconds. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, the action is passed. Let's move on to another critical issue as we invite Paige to come up to the lectern, and that is the consideration of authorization to disperse general funds to reduce the risk of whale and sea turtle entanglements in fishing gear.
Thank you, Secretary Crowfoot. Good afternoon. Item 6 includes consideration of 3 projects to reduce the risk of whale and sea turtle entanglement in fishing gear. I have the clicker. Great. to conserve biodiversity and the coastal communities and economies that rely on a healthy ocean, OPC is committed to protecting threatened and endangered whale and sea turtle species, as well as supporting thriving and profitable fisheries. At its November 2019 meeting, the Council adopted a strategy consistent with Target 3.3.5 of OPC's strategic plan, which outlines investment priorities to reduce the risk of whale and sea turtle entanglement in fishing gear as one key component of a comprehensive whale and sea turtle protection plan. This investment strategy will be advanced through OPC's allocation of general fund for whale and sea turtle entanglement from the 2018-19 governor's budget. Staff is seeking council approval of the following three projects, which are consistent with priorities identified in the investment strategy and strategic plan. This project would provide $1 million to the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission, or Pacific States, to support implementation of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, or CDFW's, drift gill net transition program. It will advance a strategic plan action to provide funding for this program, consistent with Senate Bill 1017, authored by Senator Allen in 2018. California values locally caught seafood, as well as supporting enhancing the sustainability of marine fisheries, including supporting a transition to more selective fishing gear. The drift gillnet fishery operates within federal waters and targets swordfish as well as other marketable catch such as tuna, shark, mackerel, and opa. The fishery is managed primarily by the Pacific Fishery Management Council under a fishery management plan, including gear requirements, seasonal area closures, and a fishing logbook. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has placed trained observers on a percentage of drift gillnet vessels, which have documented incidental capture of whales and sea turtles in drift gillnet gear between 1990 and 2018. Public Resources Code, as amended by SB 1017, requires OPC to use $1 million of the $7.5 million general fund for whale and sea turtle entanglement to fund the program. CDFW regulations to implement the program were effective September 2019. The program allows permittees to voluntarily surrender their drift gill net permit and net to CDFW ahead of a sunset date for in exchange for a one-time payment. Depending on landing's history, a permittee will receive $10,000 for surrender of the permit and $100,000 for the net, or $10,000 for surrender of the net and permit to the extent that funds for the program are available. In October 2019, CDFW designated Pacific States as the fiscal agent for the program. Fishermen interested in participating were required to submit a declaration of intent form by January 1, 2020. As of January 1, CDFW received 43 responses from fishermen, 28 of which are from the 31 active fishermen with landings within the past 5 years. If all fishermen who submitted forms participate, the total cost of the program is $3.23 million. Under the program, drift gill net permits are surrendered or revoked as of January 31st of the fourth year following CDFW's notification to the legislature of receipt of $1 million from non-state sources and $1 million from OPC. The council received a letter of support from Oceana stating that Oceana remains committed to helping raise the remaining non-state funds to fully implement SB 1017. Surrendered drift gill nets will be provided to a CDFW-approved entity called Net Your Problem, an organization that works with fishermen and recyclers to turn nets into new plastic products. The second project would provide up to $110,000 to the Marine Mammal Center to support the Whale and Sea Turtle Entanglement Response Network statewide and aligns with the response and outreach component of OPC's investment strategy. Observed and reported entanglements provide important information on current and future risk of entanglement as well as origins and causes. In the case that a whale or sea turtle is unintentionally entangled, expert first responders who are authorized under NOAA's Marine Mammal Health and Stranding Response Program will respond and approach the animal to attempt disentanglement. The project would support emergency response, repair or replacement of lost or damaged tools, and readiness expenses, including but not limited to new response tools, research via genetic sampling, and documentation via camera or video. The response network operates primarily on a volunteer basis and historically has received two allocations of $100,000 from the 2015-16 and 16-17 governor's budgets. This project is specifically aligned with a November 2019 Dungeness Crab Fishing Gear Working Group recommendations memo and would provide 1 year of support for the entanglement response network. While not a directly preventative solution to reducing the risk of entanglement, the network will facilitate important documentation and response efforts in the case of an entanglement, which may result in reduced mortality risk. Additionally, any forensic review analysis conducted may provide a better understanding of entanglement occurrence to inform entanglement risk mitigation. The third and final project in this item would provide up to $59,101 to the National Marine Sanctuary Foundation to support emergency responder trainings for whale and sea turtle disentanglement. Trainings would fill a critical need of providing higher numbers of responders that can successfully disentangle and reduce mortality of whales and sea turtles. A response team completes various levels of training ranging from 1 through 5 and handle different responsibilities on the water based on their acquired skills. This project supports the Sanctuary Foundation to work in partnership with OPC, NOAA Fisheries, and National Marine Sanctuaries to host 2 trainings in 2020, specifically in Monterey and Santa Barbara, in coordination with the sanctuaries. Trainings would include disentanglement mission preparation in the classroom, on-the-water skills practices, and conducting a full-scale mock disentanglement operation. Anticipated project outcomes include higher numbers of trained professionals across responder levels that are equipped to conduct successful disentanglements of whales and sea turtles. Thank you for your attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Paige. Let's move to public comment first and hear from Kathy George of the Marine Mammal Center, followed by Peggy Stapp.
Good afternoon, Secretary Crowfoot, council members, and OPC staff. My name is Kathy George. I am a project manager for global response at the Marine Mammal Center. I am also a level 3 trained and permitted responder, and I'm a member of the California Fishing Dungeness Crab Fishing Gear Working Group. I want to applaud OPC's commitment to protecting sea turtles and whales in California, and I want to pledge my support in the Marine Mammal Center support for items 6B1 and 6B2 and to ensure support for the individuals and the organizations that are doing this critical and dangerous work of entanglement. Prior to joining the Marine Mammal Center, I was the director of California Whale Rescue and managed the distribution of the previous state funding to the individuals and organizations involved in the entire network. We distributed $176,000 after overhead to 48 individuals and organizations. And if this funding is approved, I look forward to helping support this again through the Marine Mammal Center. And lastly, I want to say that I think that most importantly, the knowledge that we get during the disentanglement process, we use that towards prevention, which is our ultimate goal. So I want to thank you for supporting this request and for your time.
Thanks so much, Kathy. Let's hear next from, I think, Peggy, and maybe Peggy wants to come up with Stephanie and Jerry, or maybe individually.
Hi. I'm just going to come up since we're kind of running a little late, so I figured I'll just introduce everyone. Hello, Secretary Crowfoot, all of the council members and OPC staff. I think this is too high for me. I'm a little short. Anyway, we're really excited about the strategic plan that you adopted today because we, just like a lot of the other NGOs in the room, really want to protect our ocean and the coastline and the critters that depend on it. So, but I am Peggy Stapp, Executive Director of Marine Life Studies. I'm also the co-founder of the Whaler Entanglement Team, known as WET. I'm also a level 3 responder on the NOAA's Marine Mammal Stranding Response Program. It's a long, long word. But anyway, joining me today is Jerry Pierzchika, who's also the president of our board of directors, and Stephanie Marcos, who's our oceans operations manager. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. Operations manager, who we hired right out of college. She volunteered for us beforehand, and we just didn't want to lose her, so we really like working with young people. We are located in Moss Landing, right in the center of Monterey Bay. We conduct research on cetaceans, for those that don't know what that means, whales and dolphins for the general public, and also conduct whale rescue, and both are done under separate NOAA National Marine Fisheries federal permits in the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, which has been a real hot spot over the years for reports of entanglements, not so much they get entangled there. We also teach ocean stewardship through our ocean literacy education program to children, but also at public events to all ages. We also remove derelict gear. It's a new project we started last fall. We got funding from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. So we wanted to do something proactive besides just disentangling whales, which is really a good thing, you know, to protect our whales and different critters out there, but also to help mitigate, do something proactive. So we're real proud of that. But we submitted a letter of support on Monday for this particular agenda item, and we're in support of it. But we also provided a recommendation I hope you'll consider for the allocation of the funds for the disentanglement responses throughout the state, because there's a lot of entities up and down the state. We look forward to continuing to advance solutions for optimal ocean protection and collaborating with OPC on this issue. And I thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Peggy, for everything that you and your organizations do.
Thank you. And I also sent one out. They sent it digitally, but I also, so you got the actual Marine Mammal Guide. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I saw Jared checking it out. Peter Fulkins, followed lastly by Dylan Hansen-Ahumada.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm one of 10 level 4 primary large whale disentanglers for NOAA fisheries in the North Pacific, all the way out to Hawaiian Islands. I'm also the entanglement advisor to the Dungeness Crab Task Force Fishing Gear Working Group. I've been intimately involved in entangled whales and in the entire entangled whale issue for over 25 years, and marine mammal strandings for 45 years. And I commend the effort of the staff and their work to draw attention to this and to find support. And I encourage the commission to follow their recommendations. I heard Commissioner Yee earlier this afternoon say, "Keep the public informed." And I'd like to expand that a little bit, and let's keep the network informed, too, from the public. I'd like to speak specifically to the issue of outreach and outreach materials and how we can be more effective at that. Outreach is mentioned several times in the recommendations from the staff, but there's no identified financial support for outreach materials. What I'd like to share with you today is a couple of stories of successful outreach material in this entire issue, and all of you have been provided with little packets that have some things. In the late 1990s, the issue of stranded marine mammals became a very big issue in Northern California and in Oregon. And I partnered up with Oregon State University and Sea Grant, and we produced this first little outreach to get the public more informed so they could inform us, the researchers and the responders, on how to respond to mammals on the beach. Then in 2000, this problem of entanglements became very serious in Hawaii, where NOAA sent two of their top disentanglers to Hawaii to begin disentangling the animals out there. And out of that, Ed Lyman, one of the lead disentanglers, and I got together and came up with a concept of a Pacific Basin-wide disentangling network. And we came up with what you see in the Hawaii Guide. The first edition came out about 15 years ago. This is literally hot off the press. Hawaii hasn't even gotten this one yet. And this is our latest example of it. And I want to draw your attention to this because it involves the Hawaii equivalent of OPC and also the Hawaii equivalent of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and how they partnered together with the Marine Sanctuaries Foundation and with the responders to come up with this outreach piece that covers ship strikes, entanglements, and all of the other things that are befalling the marine mammals. Out of this effort that started 15 years ago, we developed a 15 years ago, we developed a protection network for all of the islands in Hawaii. And so we've got a highly developed network. And I see that I've got a red light there, but I want to add one thing very quickly. In about 15 years ago, actually take that back, about 10 years ago, we put together this, working with Peggy's organization in Monterey County. And what happened was reports started coming in, good reports, more often. And if you look at the data of reports of entanglements, there's a big spike in Monterey County. That's because of the outreach efforts. And so because of the outreach that we did, we were able to get better information, save the lives of more animals, which was the ultimate goal of reducing mortality, and be able to advance the network. And so I commend the efforts of the staff and the commission to support the Entangled Whale network. But I want to encourage you, we don't have the OPC's name on the back of anything like this. And I think you need to keep the public informed about what you're doing and how you are acting to save the lives of whales.
Thank you, Peter. Point taken. And I know Paige and Mark are going to pay attention to that. Okay. Appreciate your work. Dylan.
Good afternoon. My name is Dylan Hansen-Amata, and I'm with the Natural Resources Defense Council's Oceans team based in San Francisco. I want to thank Chair Crowfoot, council members, and the OPC staff for all the work you've done to prevent marine mammal entanglements. Specifically, we would like to applaud the council's proposed target of developing a statewide whale and sea turtle protection plan by 2022 with a target of zero mortality. This target will ensure that California's valuable marine species are protected for years to come, so thank you. We were happy to see the OPC adopt an investment strategy in the most recent November meeting focused on minimizing marine mammal entanglements. We're also happy to see the proposed programs today, S6A, 6B, and 6B2, and we wholeheartedly support them. Today, we'd like to look at additional program possibilities and urge the OPC to fund a proposal that supports a large-scale field trial of ropeless or pop-up gear off California's coast in the future. We believe that ropeless fishing systems are innovative technologies that reduce the potential for entanglements completely in the Dungeness crab fishery and other trap and pot fisheries. We commend the OPC for their proposed plan to support the testing of fishing gear innovations such as ropeless gear by 2021, as outlined in the strategic plan. And we would like, we have sent six key principles that we believe important to take into consideration when designing or awarding funds for a large-scale field trial of ropeless gear, and those were submitted through written testimony that I urge you guys to look at for future reference and record. We're looking forward to supporting future proposals put forth to the OPC that continue the important work of protecting our oceans and the life within those oceans. I want to thank you for your time, and NRDC is looking forward to working with the Ocean Protection Council in the near future. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dylan. So this has obviously been a major priority for the OPC in recent months and years, and I would venture a guess that we're all excited to see this funding go forward. But that being said, are there questions or comments of the commissioners before we vote to take action? Yes, Assembly Member.
Thank you. And I do agree that this is very important in the state. So the joint committee between the Senate and the Assembly has been looking at this on fisheries and aquaculture. The Dungeness Crab Task Force, there have been a lot of agencies who have been looking at this issue of whale entanglement, and I do think it's appropriate for OPC to be taking a lead and look at how we advance the technology or take part of the technology in things like ropeless fishing gear and others. But one of the parts that I want to underscore about this is the whale disentanglement piece, because we've been looking at the crisis of entangled whales, ship strikes, but for the teams that are out there on a day-to-day basis, a lot of them self-funded or looking for money from various places, they rely on their ability to react very quickly and to reach to a whale that is entangled, find them, which can be a challenge, and then conduct the disentanglement. So I'm really glad to see that this agency is putting some money forward as a part of that effort, working with the Sanctuary Foundation and others. And we need to, I think, keep our eye on how that money is getting spent, make sure it's going to the right places, and ensuring that we do have that local capacity, both federally and with states' money as well in this game, making sure that we have that capacity to get whales disentangled as we find them. So I think this is a great proposal, and I'm hoping that we will continue to participate and have visibility into how this money does get spent and ensure that we are getting animals disentangled as we do find them.
Thank you so much. Really important points. Is there a motion to adopt this action to authorize dispersing general funds to reduce the risk of whale and sea turtle entanglement in fishing gear?
Yes.
Okay, the controller makes the motion. Seconded? Seconded by Secretary Blumenfeld. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The action passes. Let's move on to item number 7, which is consideration of authorization to disperse funds for the California Collaborative Fisheries Research Program. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Good afternoon, council members. My name is Scott Chateau. I am one of the outgoing Sea Grant Fellows working with OPC. For your consideration, OPC is seeking authorization to disperse $1 million to the California Collaborative Fisheries Research Program, also known as CCFRP, to continue their statewide operation of their program through December 31st, 2021. Do it. Here we go. CCFRP is a program that has been in existence and supported by state funding since 2006. It is a partnership of volunteer fishermen, boat captains, scientists, state agency staff, NGOs, and charter companies who use their combined expertise to examine the effects that marine protected areas have on fish populations. To accomplish this, a CCFRP science team leads volunteer anglers through a set scientific protocol to fish inside and outside of MPAs along the coast.
Can I just make a comment on the photo? One is those guys seem to be having too much fun. But secondly, what kind of fish?
Lingcod, I believe, in the back. Are those all lingcod?
Oh, good.
Cabazon.
I asked Secretary Blumenfeld, and he told me he guessed it right. So
there you go. Science can be fun. All right. I'm having trouble with it. There we go. The fish are measured, tagged, and released. After fishing for a certain amount of time inside the MPA, the same protocol is followed by in a nearby reference site outside of the MPA. The data collected by CCFRP over the last 13 years is being used to help measure the impact that MPAs have on fish size, diversity, and abundance, and is critical to helping understand the performance of California's MPA network in providing ecological benefits. All the data collected on these expeditions is available on the CCFRP website and can be visualized like you see here on the screen. This data is already beginning to tell an interesting story. Here are four graphs that show the catch per unit effort for 14 fish species commonly caught on these expeditions for four different MPAs and their associated reference sites. Catch per unit effort here refers to the number of fish caught per angler hour. Data collected inside the MPA is represented by the red line, and data collected outside the MPA is represented by the blue dashed line. You can see how these fish populations have changed inside and outside of MPAs over the span of a decade. In most of the MPA sites, catch per unit effort is increasing, and more fish are being caught inside these MPAs than outside. This type of data is critically important to help inform the first adaptive management review of California's MPA network in 2022. Hook and line research is a direct way to measure how MPAs may be contributing to increased biodiversity. CCFRP is providing critical monitoring data to help the state evaluate whether our MPAs are meeting the goals of the Marine Life Protection Act. Though it is too early to draw significant conclusions from this example, it is clear that fish populations are behaving differently inside and outside of MPAs, and continuing this data collection effort is vital to the long-term monitoring of our MPA network. Not only does this program contribute important quantitative data, but it also provides a unique opportunity for volunteer anglers and citizen scientists to fish inside MPAs and see firsthand the impact that MPAs have. In fact, here's a picture of the one and only Mark Gold showing off a lingcod that he caught on a CCFRP trip a few months ago. And you can see he's really happy in that picture. CCFRP is providing significant social benefits by generating awareness of the importance of marine protected areas in maintaining ocean health and fishing opportunities.
I just want to point out before you move off this, one of the reasons, so this is something for folks to know, Mark has a real love for minor league baseball team ocean-related hats. So
is that true?
Ever, it is absolutely true. That's how I knew it was him. So if you're ever in some random place in the country that has an ocean mascot on their minor league baseball team, consider a reportable gift to our director.
And Mark, what hat is that?
Well, that one's the Tidewater Toddles for the Mets.
Wow. Learn something new at every meeting.
There you go. CCFRP trips are popular with fishermen because they provide an opportunity to fish in an area that is otherwise off limits and to get a direct view of the ecological benefits of MPAs. Attitudes of these volunteers towards MPAs are changing as a result of these trips. Fishermen are feeling more positive about MPAs when they can really experience firsthand the impacts that MPAs can have on fish populations. CCFRP is working with representatives of the Scripps Institution of Oceanography and OPC's other outgoing Sea Grant Fellow, Allison Kellum, to publish a manuscript detailing the results of a socioeconomic survey that Allison conducted of CCFRP volunteers to analyze their attitudes towards MPAs before and after participating in CCFRP trips. And in most cases, these surveys support the positive change in attitude that I just described. OPC has supported CCFRP since its inception. One additional objective we are adding to the project this year is for CCFRP to create a development plan to reach financial independence from the state within 5 years. We hope to help CCFRP become a program that can flourish on its own without relying entirely on the state for support. This project supports Objective 3.1.1 and 3.3.1 of OPC's newly adopted strategic plan, both of which speak to the importance of long-term monitoring data to assess the impacts that MPAs have on fisheries. In closing, OPC is recommending $1 million to the California Collaborative Fisheries Research Program to continue the statewide operation of their program and contribute data to the 2022 Decadal Management Review of California's MPA network. Thank you guys very much, and I'm available for questions if you have any.
Thanks so much, Scott. We have one member of the public that would like to make comment, Nicole Palma from the MPA Collaborative Network.
Hello, everyone. Nicole Palma, Program Manager for the MPA Collaborative Network. We would like to express our support for the authorization to disperse funds to the CCFRP program statewide. I'm sure it comes as no surprise that the Collaborative Network is a supporter of the interdisciplinary collaboration among CCFRP's diverse partnership of volunteer fishermen, boat captains, scientists, non-governmental organizations, and charter companies. We believe collaborations like this are necessary for successful resource management. I'll keep this short and echo Scott's comments about the importance of this program for the MPA network review and the community benefits, but I'd also like to highlight the importance for information exchange at the local level that comes out of this program. Many collaborative members are also CCFRP participants, allowing these members to provide invaluable information gained from monitoring efforts to their fellow collaborative members, facilitating the exchange of interdisciplinary information at the local level as well as at the state agency level. Thank you for your time today, and we hope you will continue to support this unique and critical monitoring program.
Thanks so much, Nicole. Not seeing any comments or questions from members of the commission, is there a motion to act on this consideration of authorization to disperse funds for the California Collaborative Fisheries Research Program? Yes. Controller makes the motion. Secretary Blumenfeld seconds the motion. All in favor of authorizing these funds, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The action is moved. Last substantive item in the agenda, the action item to consider authorizing Prop 1 funds for coastal ecosystem resiliency planning at Lower Watsonville Slough. Marina.
Good afternoon. I have the privilege of presenting the last item that stands between you and a break. Good afternoon, Chair Crowfoot and council members. I'm here to present for your consideration a staff recommendation for disbursement of Proposition 1 funds for the Coastal Ecosystem Resiliency Planning Project for Lower Watsonville Slough. The proposed project represents the last project that will be funded through grant round number 3, which began last year in summer of 2019. Three other Proposition 1 funding projects were approved by the Council in November 2019 from that round. Round 4 of the Proposition 1 grant program will be coming soon, later in 2020. Next slide. So the proposed project is consistent with both the Proposition 1 priority areas, which are listed in the left-hand column of the slide, as well as three of the goals from the newly approved strategic plan, including targets related to implementation of pilot projects that address sea level rise, as well as improving, in Goal 2, improving coastal access for underserved communities, in this case, Watsonville and Pajaro, and Goal 3, specifically for habitat restoration projects that improve coastal wetland habitats and associated water quality. Next slide. So here you have a few images to help you visualize the project site. Lower Watsonville Slough is an 800-acre wetland complex that supports over 250 bird species and 23 native species of plants and animals that are state and federally listed as threatened, endangered, or of special concern. They include steelhead, tidewater goby, western pond turtle, and the western snowy plover. Other sensitive species include the California red-legged frog and freshwater mussels. So this project is a feasibility and initial project design project that is intended to produce a nature-based infrastructure solution design that reestablishes and enhances wetlands and tidal marsh habitat while reducing flooding risk, planning for climate change adaptation, and providing recreational opportunities to the disadvantaged local communities of Watsonville, Pajaro, and unincorporated Santa Cruz County. The grantee would be the Santa Cruz County Pajaro Storm Drain Maintenance District. To give you a little idea of what the problem is at the site that we're trying to solve, one of the main objectives of the project is to address the regular flooding that happens at the mouth of the Pajaro River and Lower Watsonville Slough when those bodies of water are closed at the ocean by a sandbar, and winter rains and large ocean swells are overwhelming the water management system's ability to control water levels. This flooding affects farmlands, county roads, and important city and county infrastructure, including the city wastewater treatment facility. Typically, you see there at the top of the image on the left-hand side, flooding regularly occurs at the intersection of Shell and Beach Roads. And since Beach Road is the only entrance or exit from the Pajaro Dunes residential community, the flooding can prevent safe access for residents to leave their community to get food or receive an ambulance in the event of an emergency. You see at the top of the slide a 2015 photo of a bus having to turn around at the intersection because it cannot enter to pick up students. The typical solution for the last 20 years has been mechanical breaching at the mouth of the river, and unfortunately this has happened at least 20 times since the late 80s. Typically, each time flooding occurs, the local district spends at least $20,000 to perform the mechanical breach at the mouth of the slough, and not only is it expensive, it threatens snowy plovers and other important coastal species every time that it is performed. So the proposed project would design a solution that would ensure that flooding does not happen and that sea level rise does not overwhelm water management facilities such as a local pump station, which will also prevent reduction of the coastal groundwater aquifer because it will provide additional room for brackish water to circulate in the lower slough system. Next slide. So these areas show, show some current images of the project site that would be widened and restored for improved ecosystem function. One of the other project goals would be design of a restoration project to enhance wetland and tidal marsh habitat that would also provide for natural filtration and improvement of water quality for the water that flows out to the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary and the Soquel Canyon State Marine Conservation Area. And lastly, another benefit of the project would be improved public access generally, as well as for local disadvantaged communities. The project design would include a trail system, a free low-impact development parking, and interpretive and educational signage. There is currently no free public parking in the project area. The only public parking currently available is a small parking lot that costs $10 a day for day use fee near the entrance to the Pajaro Dunes residential community at Palm Beach. Palm Beach is part of Sunset State Park. So in conclusion, staff recommends a grant of $850,000 for this feasibility and planning project. I'm ready to answer any questions that you may have regarding the project, and a representative from the maintenance district is also here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you so much. We don't have any public comment cards for this, so let me just make an observation that we many of us have been talking about the importance of nature-based solutions, and really building our climate resilience in ways that work for communities and the environment. And this, to me, is an emblematic project of that, where we are reducing flood risk for the Watsonville community in a way that is protective and improves the habitat for a whole lot of endangered and threatened species. So I'm excited with this project and hope we can fund more like it in coming years. With that said, any comments or questions from the commission?
I just add my voice to Secretary Crowfoot and saying, as we're talking about and thinking about the resiliency bond, this is exactly the kind of thing, you know, we're helping severely disadvantaged communities with the potential of sea level rise and looking at how nature-based solutions can really provide help. In addition to that, the matching funds from the Army Corps of Engineers, I think, really helps make this project viable. So congrats.
I'm just thrilled that we're not continuing to apply Band-Aids.
Mm-hmm. Well put. Do we have a motion to approve dispersal of this funding?
I move.
Oh, Secretary Blumenfeld, seconded by Controller Yee.
Because, really quick.
Enthusiastic.
I know, it's exciting.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Excellent. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marina. We don't have any other public comment on non-agenda items. I may make two final points. The first is our next meeting, again, will be held on June 19th in the Bay Area. Very excited to get out of Sacramento to the coast to do our business. And secondly, we have Oceans Day coming up in Sacramento, which is March 24th, Tuesday, March 24th. So I know that there are a lot of groups that are already engaged in that, but if you work on ocean and coastal issues or care about those issues, please do come to Sacramento on that day and make your voice heard. That'll be a very good day for us to share all of these efforts with a broader set of policymakers. Thank you to OPC staff, Dr. Gold. This meeting is adjourned.